G, you can have a seat here, next to the minister, and then you have all the chairs here, and the CEOs. I can see when it's BRC already, but that's calling out. Kalango HDA. HDA, we must start with your report that we've postponed, and then you then go into your APP.
Your laptop is dying. Where's your charger? Are you able to charge it?
Okay. I come home.
Yeah, your mother.
Yeah. How can it not?
Oh, yeah. No, I thought the one side was smaller. The same side. Yes.
Welcome, Chair and your CEO, HDA. Okay, we'll then allow the minister to introduce the entity officially to members of parliament. Minister?
No, thanks, Chair. I think what we can just do is maybe introduce the entire delegation of all the entities at once.
Yes.
So that once we start the presentations, we won't have any problem. Let's start from where just after the acting DG, so that they can introduce themselves to us, and then maybe request those who are at the back who are not part of the introduction
in the morning to do the introductions, so they can say their name, surname, and to their position in the entity that they are in.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Chairperson, members of the committee, Honourable Minister Nguyen. My name is Cameron Bauer. I'm the acting CFO of NHBRC.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable members of the committee, Minister DM, chairs of boards and my fellow CEOs and other colleagues. My name is Songhez Boy, CEO NHBRC.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members, colleagues. My name is Francois Beekman. I'm the Deputy Chair of the NHBRC. I'm standing in for our Chairperson. Ms. Nomusa Mufumadi is currently out of town. I just want to thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, Honourable Members of the Portfolio, Minister, Deputy Minister, Chairperson of the CEO, my name is Mangoba Soni. I'm the interim chairperson of the
Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, the members of the committee, the Honourable Minister and the Honourable Deputy Minister, the chairs of the entities. and my colleagues from the administration. My name is Peggy Kenisa. I'm the CEO of HDA Centre.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, Minister, Deputy Minister and the Chair of the Boards and the CEOs and the colleagues. My name is Joy Masemola and I'm the CFO of the HDA. Good afternoon, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Minister and DM, and good afternoon to all the Portfolio Committee members. My name is Debo Sijani. I'm the Manager responsible for Strategy and Performance at the HDA. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, members of the committee, Minister, Deputy Minister, fellow chairpersons of boards, and CEOs, CFOs. My name is Pindile Mteta from the Community Schemes Ombud Service.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister and Deputy Minister. My name is Thembile Shembata, the Acting Chief Ombud at the Community Schemes Ombud Service.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, Minister, members of the Portfolio Committee, leadership of all the entities. My name is Sandy Lemchumi. I am the CEO of the Social Housing Committee.
Chairperson,
Okay. Minister, you can invite your entities to come through.
With the report that you've requested, Chair, from HDA, the Chair, interim chairs, yeah, for the team. I'll come into questions if they need.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Portfolio. Thank you very much, Honorable Minister.
I forgot to give you time. You have extra 15 minutes. The rest have got 30 minutes. You have extra 15 minutes because of the report that you owe us here. Okay.
This is the report that the members did not receive on time. So we will cover the highlights. Of the report will cover the audit outcome of 2021-2022. We'll also give the highlights of the prior year in terms of the audit findings for 2020-2021, and then we'll also make a presentation on the audit findings for 2021-2022, and then the recommendation in terms of how we are dealing with the HE findings. These are the 36 audit findings that emanated, that led to us to have a qualified audit, which is the last time, Chairperson, it will never happen again. And we are saying this, Chairperson, because one of the things that we have done, we have reviewed our structure to address the situation that we find ourselves in, and then we've also dealt with our primary mandate in terms of the strategy. We've appointed the Chief Audit Executive, Chairperson. Previously, we never used to have a CAE. Mm-hmm. We used to have an internal auditor within our organization. So we decided that we need to upgrade this position so that we can deal with these findings that we got. We have also, Chairperson, managed to implement the records and document management system within the organization, and that included the process mapping. We now have got an asset register that is automated. We have also increased our internal control within the sphere of supply chain management and finance to ensure that there's efficiency in that area. We've appointed the service provider chair to assist with a review of annual financial statement, including the interpretation of RAP. And we've addressed all the backlog on investigations and determinations of tests relating to irregular and fruitless expenditure. Chair, we've also appointed a condonation committee within the organization in order to deal with the assessment of these irregular expenditures. And the CEO is running with that, and I'm told that the service provider has been appointed to assist with this. And then also further, the internal audit unit has conducted monthly follow-up audits, is conducting rather monthly follow-up audits on external audit action plan to assess whether the previously raised external audit funding has been satisfactorily addressed by management. Chair, this is an overview that I'm giving at my level with a team from the HDA. I've got the CEO, Mr. Kenisa, the CFO, Ms. Joy Masemula, as well as the head of planning and coordination, as well as strategy, Mr. Cheney. And he's accompanied by Mr. Chanel, who is the manager of operational performance. So interchangeably, we'll do the presentation, Chair, and we'll then expect questions or receive questions and comments, as well as compliments, Chair. Even if we compliment us on the colors of the presentation, we'll appreciate that so that we can go back and say there was something positive that was said by the portfolio. And then we'll then give the respect to your chairmanship. CEO, what's
you? Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Chair, as our interim chair has said, last year we received a qualified opinion. And then the basis of the opinion was on project obligations, as you remember that, because we're dealing with the department. So there were issues that were raised in terms of the project obligations as to whether the money, where is it spent, is it with us or is it when it's with the department and all of those other issues. So I can safely say, Chair, that we think we've crossed that bridge. We're fine now. We've resolved all of those issues. The issues of project receivables, which are interlinked to the very same issues of the department. Chair, we had challenges in terms of the land inventory, because remember that most of the time what we do as the ACA is that we purchase land and make it ready for use for the... So there were issues that were raised in terms of our plant run, property plant and equipment. In the main were issues of the inventory to say how do we then classify the land that we keep, and then also the issues of how do we, when we've got that land, what do we use that land for and all of those. So all of those issues were raised, the issues of the valuation of the land were raised. We will, as we continue, unpack, Chair, as to what we have done in terms of resolving those issues, but we're quite comfortable that we've passed that bridge now. And then as the chair has said, that we are at a point where we're thinking we are quickly approaching the clean audit phase. Chair. The issues of irregular fruitless and wasteful expenditure were raised. And then when you look at our report, you'll see, Chair, that for the previous 4 years, the issues were not dealt with in terms of addressing the irregular expenditure and the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We can safely say, Chair, that all of those have been addressed. We're waiting for the last board committee to sit, board meeting to sit now, where the condonation, we will take the report for condonation. So, when you look at it from that angle, you will see in our next MR that there will be a difference in terms of the amount that we record for irregular expenditure. And then on the predetermined objectives, Chair, we had an unmodified opinion. We're hoping we will continue with an unmodified opinion. So the prior year audit findings, I will give them to the CFO to take us through all of those as to where were the prior year results. But I need to say, Honorable Minister, that some of them, because we're using the colors, some of them we will put them in amber, but it does not necessarily mean that they are not resolved. But because we have to resolve them when we do the final F, it will only show in the F. So before that, we'll then leave them here as amber up until they are resolved in the F. So to the extent that some of those are amber, Chair, they should not worry you that maybe has not been resolved. From where we sit, we think that we've resolved all the prior issues that we have. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Honorable Chair, I'll take you through the 2020-21 financial year audit findings. And at the time, there were only two that were still remaining that were not resolved. The first one on the cash and cash equivalents, we have resolved that finding. And the second one on the creditors with credit balances incorrectly classified as payable. Here, Chair, this warranted an investigation, and we can safely say that the investigation report was finalized in January 2023, and funds, some of the funds have been recovered from the service providers, and also we have taken this matter for consequence management, Chair. So that process has commenced as well. And then now when we look at the 2021-22 financial year findings, Chair, lack of capacity within the ICT division, we have resolved that. There has been appointments in this unit. And then in terms of the inadequate design IT security policy, Chair, this policy, it has been, we can safely say it has been presented at the ARC. That's set now in the fourth quarter and is awaiting board approval. So that's why it's still yellow. And then the server room not appropriately maintained. Chair, this finding was actually given when HDA was still in the Kilani. However, because now we are occupying the megawatt building, so this server room, it is maintained by ESCOM. So on this one, will remain yellow up until we move our offices, Chair. And then we have resolved number 4 and number 5, Chair. And then the CE touched on the issue of the land inventory. Chair, these are the valuations that were not performed at the end of the financial year. And you can see that all these findings, they were only occurring for the first time during 2021-22 financial year. And now we can safely say that we have unpacked all the land register that we have, and we've made sure that we have verified the land that we have. So we do have a land register that is in place, and also the municipal valuations are now applied. And then on the land inventory not measured at current replacement cost, we did take this matter to National Treasury because it was a bit complex, and they have assessed the accounting treatment, and also a GRAP specialist was appointed, and they've also given us their opinion. And we will be disclosing this matter appropriately this time around, Chair. So we're not expecting that these findings will occur again. Under statement of receivables, and this is the rental that we receive from these properties that we are renting out, and it was saying that the data statements were not prepared, so we are now performing those monthly recons as well as the data statement as sent on time to the tenants, and also those data statements, they're coming from the accounting system, so it's no longer done outside the system change. So we're expecting that this finding will not recur. And then number 10, Chair, this is now on the project. There was a finding which qualified us on the overstatement of project obligation, as well as the supporting information not provided for project receivables. Chair, this is a finding that was raised in the prior two financial years, and Chair, we have reversed all those invoices where funds were not received, which caused this overstatement in our books, and again, now all the invoices raised are based on the funding agreements that we have in place, and then as I said, that we have reversed those invoices where you find that a province therefore does not give us money for that. So we also have consulted a lot on this matter, and currently we are safe to say that for this 2022-23 financial year, this finding should not recur. And then I'll move on to number 14 on the understatement of receivables. Here it is the same progress, because now even the monthly reconciliations we do send to the provinces so that the CFOs can also agree with us the funds that are with the HDA, and then we reconcile on the on that basis, Chair. Then Chair, number 17, SCM. Under SCM, awards to persons in the service of the state. This occurred in the previous 2 years, and Chair, we can safely say that we have appointed an agency to verify the information, more especially when we make appointments, they check the service providers, because other service providers, they deliberately do not fill in this SPD4 form, and they verify that information and they check that they are not doing a business with the state. So we're hoping that this finding will not recur, Chair. And then 18 and 19, this is the criteria that was used to disqualify bidders, was not indicated as per the bid spec. Chair, we have put a process in place within the SCM, so including the BEC, the BAC, all those members from the bid spec, they have been taken for training. So we have strengthened the internal controls within the supply chain. So we have implemented the checklist, the procurement activation forms, as well as the tender register that is in place. And then number 21, this is incorrect calculation of functionality used for bid numbers. Chair, it only occurred in the previous financial year, and we are safe to say that we have corrected this. And now we're only waiting for internal audits to verify that yes, indeed those internal controls are working within the SCM unit. And then after that, we're expecting that all the SCM findings will be green, as well as item number 23, Chair. Then when we move under finance, Chair, this is the existence and completeness of assets which could not be confirmed. This is one of the findings that was that qualified us, and it was only raised last financial year, because that's when we moved offices from Kilani. So there was no register from Kilani to Megawatt, and the auditors could not verify
the assets that we had, because everything was put in the storeroom and it was left like that. So, Chair, we have put in place controls. We restarted our asset register in place. We have also appointed the asset disposal committee, and all those assets that are obsolete, we are in the process of disposing those assets, Chair. So we do not expect any findings on the assets to recur. And then there were attorneys that were appointed as, from the panel of lawyers, and they were paid for audit work. So this one, Chair, we have disclosed this as irregular expenditure, and currently we make sure that the panels are used for the purpose that they were appointed for, Chair. And then 30 and 31, under statement of provision for bad debt, Chair, on this one, we are safely safe because during the interim as well as the third quarter, we have provided for bad debt, and we checked the calculation, so we are safe to say that this finding will not recur. We're only waiting for internal audit just to verify for us, and then after the F, therefore we should be able to close this finding. Then prior period adjustment in the financial statement has been done incorrectly. Chair, we have corrected this, and also internal audit just needs to verify that. Retention fees liability is not recognized in the F's, Chair. We have requested now that all the contracts with the clause on the retention fees must be submitted to finance so that this matter can be disclosed properly. So we're not expecting that this issue can recur, Chair, and we need to disclose this in terms of GRAP 1 as well as GRAP 11. And then finding 24, this is CIDB, gateway review not performed for major capital projects. Chair, this remains yellow, and we noted that this gateway review was not done. So now we are addressing this finding by making sure that we put a committee in place that will review all the projects that we receive from the provinces. We review the existing framework that has been completed, as well as stringent criteria adopted for acceptance of projects from the provinces, as well as process to implement the IDMS, including gateway review, is being finalized, and the development of the policy and the SOP is underway. And we can safely say that this policy was presented at EXCO, so now it must also move on to other governance committees so that it can be adopted. Chair.
Chairperson, just one or two additions before we request for the report to be noted. You will have noticed that in the opening remarks of the minister indicated that all the boards in her entities, the board members, have been appointed. So that's one of the things that we rectified in order to be able to deal with this audit finding. And also, there has been instability in the organization in terms of leadership. We stayed for a very long time without a CEO. But now we do have cream of the crop, you'll agree. That contains the experience from private sector and public sector. I'm sure you're wondering how we got Mr. Kenneth, but we managed because we are serious about dealing with a qualified audit. We also have got the CFO. We didn't have the CFO for a very long time in the organization, but in order to deal with this quagmire, we had to get these two executive directors. We also have got an operational claim audit committee at an operational level that is monitoring these findings very, very close. So with this presentation, Chairperson, through you, Minister, we are saying that the committee must please note this progress that we've made. We thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Acting Chair. We will allow you to present your APP, and so that the members, when they ask questions, they will include all the questions of this report and the report of the APP.
just a moment, Chair, while we are setting up the presentation.
There is no problem. You are still on the floor.
Okay.
She has just stepped out. She'll be coming back, but you can proceed.
Okay. So, I indicated earlier that we have decided to resuscitate our primary mandate of that of being a developer, and we'll also be looking at the phase of development. The organization that I mentioned earlier, is one we started with together with the strategy. We've been implementing the strategy in terms of our mandate. And then also in conjunction with that, we've identified several properties. Some of those is a property that we've just acquired here in Cape Town, the SDC building in Sea Point, as well as the ESCOM building that is located in Braamfontein. And as well as Kimberley, respectively. So with this, we want to contribute to the spatial transformation and the creation of the integrated community. So these are the initiatives that we'll be doing. So in terms of the land parcels, we are grateful that the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure has managed to release 44 land parcels. At a magnitude of 2,557 hectares, and then 32 of those, 32 more, is awaited, which is at a magnitude of 10,350 hectares. Chairperson, these parcels of land will be ruled in various human settlements, not limited to rural housing, social and rental housing, as well as integrated residential housing. As a highlight, we also want to indicate that the grant funding that is currently allocated for 2023-2024 is 243.6 million, and that's plus or minus 52% of our total revenue. In terms of our conditional grant funding, that's the one that comes from region, we call it MCOS, it's an amount of 228.5 million, and that's approximately 68% of our total revenue. And then in terms of our investment income, we are sitting at 1%,
And that is why we have decided that on our end, we have a lack of investment
to increase that percentage from 1% so that we can start making making money for ourselves and not depend on the department. Sooner or later, we'll be presenting to yourself, to your good self, the strategy as to how we'll deal with the issues of investment. Jefferson, in terms of the targets contained in 2023 in our corporate plan, we'd like to remind the portfolio committee that it is informed by the provincial departments and municipalities, and we are at a risk of that if midterm, if they withdraw the commitment, we are likely not to achieve our target, and that has been a challenge for us not to achieve our target. We have not been achieving our target not because we are not performing, Honorable Shashatin. We have not been achieving our target because at any given point, municipalities and provincial departments, they will withdraw the mandate or the commitment, and then it will make us feel that we will then not be able to meet our target. So we'll be praying that that is not the case this fiscal year, and I'm sure the team at an operational level will be on the ground to make sure that those commitments that we've made with the provinces and municipalities, they stand, that we convince them not to withdraw any of them. You will notice that in the presentation, when the team presents, from the previous, the financial year, before the last financial year, we're at 29% in terms of our performance, and we've skyrocketed to 69%. Last financial year. We are not happy with that, although it's progress. We are not happy with that, and you'll see a different performance this financial year. So we thought that we indicate that we're not happy with that 69%. But also, we are saying, Chair, all funds transferred to HDA will follow the DORA initiated by the transferring officer prior to release to the HDA. I will then hand over to the CEO, who will then also make a presentation, and then he will then decide whether he wants to delegate that one. Over to you, CEO.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Boho will take over from.
Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Chairperson. I will take the presentation as read and the APT as read. We'll focus mainly on the key issues that link back to what the chairperson has said already. I will skip some of the slides because they have been covered in the audit plan that we've just presented and also how we have dealt with some of those issues. In terms of our APT, chairperson, and I may be preaching to the converted here, we know that the HDA's mandate is covered in the Act, in the HDA Act, as we are a creature of statute. The mandate and the impact statement is about sustainable human settlements and improved quality of life for households. So as we do our work on a daily basis, that's the measure that we put in place. Our vision is to become the public sector developer of choice, providing integrated sustainable human settlements and security of tenure. It is aspirational because, and you will see our plans aligning to that. Our mission is to accelerate delivery of spatially transformed, integrated and sustainable human settlements, provision of security of tenure and improvement of asset wealth of our communities, and also ensuring that we transform the human settlement sector to be inclusive of the country's demographic profile, with specific focus on the marginalized sectors of women, youth, and persons with disabilities. This will be linked back as we talk about our macro indicators in terms of what are the targets that are focused, that we have put in place to focus on these sectors. I think I will focus on the three areas, which is in terms of how we deliver services. We deliver them as a developer, and that's what we want to focus on in this financial year that we're going into. The chairperson has already said that 2023-24 financial year marks the period where we become the fully fledged developer of choice, because we have developed a structure that supports that mandate, but also that we have identified already acquired pieces of land and properties that we can launch ourselves into the space. We have in the past focused mainly on the other two areas of our responsibilities, which is to become an implementing agent but also a program manager. We have done very little on the side of becoming a developer of choice, and that's what our APP reflects and we want to focus on. Chairperson, with your permission, I will not focus too much on the parcel analysis. I think that it might take a bit of time, but I do want to skip to the SWOT analysis and just pick a few points so that we don't spend too much time. I think one of
already you have consumed your time. You are on the injury time, so just move with speed.
So I will skip this as well. Safe to say that one of the threats that we continue to face, and the chairperson has touched on this, and it's important for us to continue to underscore this point, is that there's continued dependencies of provinces and municipalities, because that's how we deliver services. So if the province or municipality withdraws a mandate in the middle of the year, it does have an impact on our performance. We have done, in terms of mitigating factors, as we prepared our plans for the financial year that we are already in, we ensured that we only focus on only those where the agreements are complete and the funds are already almost transferred to ourselves, so that we do not have those challenges. So I'm preempting that, because you will see that our targets are relatively lower than they used to be before, and that is the reason why the targets that we have this year are lower, to ensure that we take care of those issues. We have also prepared a slide here to look at how are we contributing to the MTSF, and this links back to some of the targets that the National Department has already presented. The priority development areas, that target was met in the previous financial year. In fact, we overachieved as a sector, because we delivered this in conjunction with the National Department. We have done 136, but because these targets are predetermined in the MTSF, we've kept it at 94, because that's what is registered on the DPME system. In terms of housing units, our target for the MTSF is 25,420 units, but for the year that we are in, we are looking at 8,386. Again, it's a significant drop if you were to look at our previous APPs, but that's the reason that we have already underscored as key reasons in our target setting in the current financial year. In terms of service size, we are only going to be delivering 953. For the same reasons. In terms of rezoning of land that was acquired in the previous MTSF, we have quantified the exact number of hectares that were acquired in the previous MTSF that also meet the criteria, which is to fall within PDAs. And we are expected by the end of this financial year to have rezoned 100% of that. That is what is sitting in our target. And also 6,000 number of hectares of well-located land acquired in PDAs. Our target for the year that we're going into is 1,000. I will not repeat the ones that I've already spoken to, but I think we will emphasize our plans to ensure that we get an unqualified audit outcome, and also our targets for transformation. We are looking at, in terms of procurement spend, we have done relatively well in the previous years in terms of businesses owned by women, and that's why our target is slightly higher. It's sitting at 45%. We had 40% previously. For procurement spend for businesses targeted at youth, it's 25%. And for persons with disability, we are looking at 7%. We will also be providing support to informal settlement upgrading program to phase 3 This is specifically for projects that are also from the Eastern Cape. There's a budget that has already been agreed, so we are looking at specifically phase 3 and not phase 1, 2, all the other phases. It's phase 3 specifically. We will continue to provide support to the revitalization of distressed mining communities and working with the six provinces. Chair, I will not cover these slides, but I just want to just, this is the organizational structure that was approved that supports the mandate of the organization. The interim chair raised that in his presentation. I won't go through these slides because you've already summarized that. I will speak quickly to the impact over the MTSF because this year is also the midterm. In terms of the MTSF, we have facilitated the acquisition of 3,952 hectares of land in priority development areas, and to date we have achieved 32% of that 100% of land that needs to be acquired, that needs to be rezoned in the priority development areas. In terms of total number of housing units, we've done 8,276. We do have a shortfall, and I'll speak to the recovery plan there. We also have a shortfall in terms of service sites. The recovery plan includes basically working around the IGR matters, as already mentioned. A lot of the work that we do is in collaboration or is on behalf of a municipality or a province, so we do have to get the IGR matters in check, and we are doing that and to ensure that we unlock bottlenecks in procurement and also we avoid communication delays. We have gone through a process internally of capacitating our internal procurement process so that we can fast track the appointment of service providers. It has been a challenge in the past, and so we've moved there. We've also started a process of reviewing non-performing contractors. We find that we have contractors on board. Some of them are non-performing. We've kept them for various reasons, but now we as management, we are reviewing their performance and commencing processes of termination where they are non-performing contractors. And also, internally, we have adopted a policy to empower financial restraint service providers by paying them 15 days after the submission of invoices so that there's no delays in delivery on the ground. I will hand over to the CFO who will speak to the financial statements, which is on slide 13.
Chair, I'll only focus on the slide, but the previous two slides you will see.
You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Chair. Quickly. In terms of the operational guide, Chair, we are expecting to receive 243 million from the department, and in terms of the MTOPs, what we are expecting to receive from the provinces is about 228 million, and that our total revenue we expect to 178 million. But in terms of the legislation, we need to be assessed with the same our expenditure. So we're also indicating our payroll cost there, 262 million.
Thank you very much. Entity number 2. Nangu NHBRC, is that? Honourable Member, sir. Proceed.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to use 2 minutes. Just maybe the roadmap to today. This APP was evaluated by management 2 times by council as well as by department and executive authority. In terms of our focus areas as indicated in the APP, of course, it's clean audit, the strategic capitalization of the NHBRC, 50-50 gender balance at top management if we complete the current processes, then the financial sustainability of the organization. At the end of March, our guarantee fund was at 8.8 billion, so we must ensure that the necessary strategic and operational risk monitor plans is in place, making the organization a center of excellence in the built environment and also social transformation. Maybe just in terms of the issue of digital services, if members go now this afternoon to the website, they will see that you can register as a builder or you do your renewal of registration online, anywhere from anywhere in the country. You don't have to go to the offices. And of course, the enrollments and inspection model in terms of the digital service is also underway. Maybe just to indicate, the council has finalized the organizational structure, the CEO appointment, and other executive manager appointments is currently underway, and also the review of the inspection model. Chairperson, maybe in the other session mention was made of the issue of the inspectors, the risk of corruption. Maybe just to indicate the following. There's currently 88 inspectors in the organization and 6 supervisors. They are all attached to certain regional offices. So if there's specific complaints, we want to really call on members to make those complaints, but also to say the following. There is a dedicated anti-corruption line 24/7 in place. The number is 080-203698. And it's an independent service provider, so if there's complaints with regard to collusion, of course, please, deal with that. Maybe just to indicate, we had 3 or 4 inspectors that was put under duress, so there is also, in the inspection environment, difficult situations for them to deal with. But there's an anti-corruption commitment from the council, and we appreciate the comments made by honourable members, and we'll take those forward. Without further ado, the CEO. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Chair. Good afternoon, once again, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, Honourable Minister, Honourable DM, Acting DG, Chairs of NGPs, CEOs, and colleagues. Let me start by appreciating the opportunity, Chair, to be engaging with the Portfolio Committee on our APP, which is for the 2023-24 financial year. I think over the past 2.5 years, one got used to engaging with the Portfolio Committee through virtual platforms. I think at some point one got to be comfortable through those engagements. I think we welcome that opportunity. We did get a brief, Chair, in terms of what the expectation was in as far as the engagement for today, where we'll be presenting our APP. However, having been part of the earlier discussion and sitting there at the back, one got to appreciate that there are pressing issues that are of concern to the members, specifically around issues of quality on site, as well as the role of an initial inspector during construction. I think that's just to build up on what the teacher has said, through this council members, the NHBRC has reviewed an inspection model. There is a new inspection model, a hybrid inspection model that has been developed. It has a number of components. Maybe I'll touch on two, i.e. the role of a builder on site, the role of an NHBRC inspector, and how we as an NHBRC can leverage on technology through that whole inspection process. I think, Chair, with time permitting, I think maybe we would want to engage with the Portfolio Committee in terms of outlining and unpacking that inspection model to the committee. So in terms of what I'm going to cover briefly, Chair, without wasting time, I will not deal with all the issues because we do have an APP that was submitted. I think on a high level, I'll deal with some of the key issues that are important that I would want to outline to the members. I will not go through all the slides. There are 29 slides that we prepared that summarizes the APP of the organization. I think, Chair, this is an important slide that is before the members. It sort of outlines who we are as an NHBRC. However, when one looks at the slide, one gets to appreciate that in a perfect world, this is what we would want to achieve, but there are issues that we are experiencing on site. Yes, we do have a good story to tell. However, there are those few cases that have been identified which sort of overshadow the good work that we do as NHBRC. So at the center of what we want to do is to protect the housing consumer by ensuring that the builder that builds that house is NHBRC registered. They understand the norms and standards. They understand the issues around quality. And through our inspection process, that's where now we're looking at how then do we enforce quality on site. So we, in developing this APP, we went through a consultative process in the sense that in this current year that we are looking at, which is 2023-24, we took a different approach, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, in the sense that we wanted to engage provinces to ensure that going forward there is alignment in terms of the numbers that we report on in the NHBRC, the numbers that the provinces do report on. I think members would appreciate or would have seen that there are some changes that we proposed on the APP where we are looking at shifting away from some of how on how we have measured some of those KPIs which would have been driven by percentages in prior years. We are now looking at measuring those using numbers. Those numbers would have been informed by the provinces through our engagement. So in terms of the some of the key initiatives that the chair, the deputy chair of council has spoken of, there is a change, a big shift that we have embarked on in HBRC where we are looking at digitizing our services. So there's two phases that we've completed, which is the registration and renewal of home builders. The one that we're currently deploying at the present moment is the one that talks to the enrollments of homes in both subsidy and non-subsidy sector, as well as the digitizing of the inspection process. So that process is currently ongoing, so it changes the face of how we interact with our stakeholders at the NHBRC. There are other quite important decisions that council has taken, i.e. looking at strengthening or building stability in the organization through the filling of vacancies and also through a partnership that we've developed with SACPCMP where we are looking at professionalizing our home inspectors so that then they get professionalized and they are able then to discharge their functions. But that process we will be looking at it closely. We have partnered with institutions of higher learning in deploying this new inspection model. I think I did indicate, Chair, that maybe perhaps time permitting, we would want to come back or engage the committee further in terms of what this new inspection model looks like, what it seeks to achieve, and what are the key areas that have been outlined, and how will those be addressed going forward. The other issues that I would want to talk to, Chair, is the role that NHBRC plays in the economic reconstruction and recovery plan. There are KPIs that are sort of standardized across the entities which are looking at the set aside, i.e. the BEs spend on 40% of companies owned by women, 16% on youth-owned companies, 5% on companies owned by people with disabilities and military veterans. So within HBRC, we've also prioritized this through the leadership of our council to ensure that this takes priority in the budget that we formulated the NHBRC. We also had a program that we had with which we called a women empowerment program that we facilitated through a partnership with GIBS. We had a graduation of about 105 learners in December, so we are in the process of continuing with that program and getting more learners on board. So it is part of the procurement plan that we have for the current financial year. And also there is an agreement that we've had with TVETS where we are partnering now with TVETS looking at artisan development, where we are training artisans and we are training youth as well as emerging home builders. Now, in terms of the actual APP which we will use, which stakeholders can utilize to measure how effective the NHBRC has been, I think I can report that the unaudited number in terms of our performance as things stand now is 93%. That might appear to be high, but having listened to the concerns raised, it's not comforting when one knows that there are issues that need to be attended to, which we will then prioritize. So in terms of the structuring of our key performance indicators for the organization, we've kept the three programs unchanged, which is the three programs. First one is the administration program, which looks at support functions within the organization, i.e. issues around corporate governance, issues around supply chain issues that I spoke to earlier.
And then the other two, which is program two and program three, now those ones, they speak to the core mandate of the entity. Regulation speaks to the registration of home builders and the renewal, as well as the inspections. So in the APP itself, honorable members of the committee, you would see that we've moved away from reporting in percentages. We have moved out, we have moved into reporting in numbers, so that then there is alignment in terms of what the provinces will be reporting and what we as an HPRC are going to be reporting. The third program is looking at consumer protection, where now we are looking at the warranty that the NHPRC provides through the homes that are enrolled with the entity, both on the subsidy side and non-subsidy side. And then the third component is the issue around IBT, where we are looking at systems that have been developed, which will then ensure that housing delivery is fast-tracked in the country. And Honorable Chair and members, we do have a budget that seeks to support the initiative that I've spoken to. With your permission, Chair, I'll ask the acting CFO to quickly run through the budget for the members.
Good afternoon once again, and thank you very much for the opportunity to present our 2023-2024 budget. Looking at, in terms of units, what we are looking at achieving with this budget for 2023-2024, in terms of enrollment, on the non-subsidy sector, 50,000 units, and on subsidy, just over 56,000. These enrollments make up the bulk of our revenue. It takes a lot of time and focus. We have aligned our subsidy home enrollments to those of the department, so that we can ensure alignment of our reporting going forward. Translating these into rand, we are projecting a total revenue for this financial year of 945 million. I will unpack this a bit further in the coming slides. Our expenditure for the financial year is sitting at 897 million. We have allocated 2 million rand in this financial year to research and development. We believe this is an important area for us as NHPRC, as we strive to be a centre of excellence in the sector. While it does look at a decrease from the amount in the prior financial year, this is due that there are a large number of projects already underway, and there are also a number of collaborations and MOUs that we have entered into with other institutions to assist us in achieving this target. So we will be managing to maintain a budgeted operating profit of around 23 million. With regards to net investment income, so this is the performance of our warranty fund. We have based the 493 million on an assessment of how we predict the market will be in the coming financial year, which will leave us with an overall surplus of 516 million. I think in developing the budget, our focus is mainly in terms of revenue and expenses, because this is important for us in achieving our financial sustainability. As mentioned earlier, the large portion of our revenue comes from our subsidy home enrollments, as well as our non-subsidy home enrollments. Also included there is our subsidy project enrollment, so that totals around 96% of our revenue. The others are from our registrations and renewals. I won't spend too much time on this slide. I know it's a lot of information, but it unpacks each of our revenue streams that make up the 945 million for the coming financial year. In terms of our operating expenses, so we are looking here, we have made provision for an outsourced inspectorate. I think the CEO did mention around the hybrid inspectorate model, so this has been provided for in terms of our operating expenses. Also, during this current financial year, we had our operating structure was approved, so we've made provision for the 610 positions in the organization. And the remainder of our costs, we have, for example, our lease costs, we've honored our existing contracts. We do look at negotiating better lease prices. I think I would also like to mention here that as a council, council have undertaken to look at the financial sustainability going forward of NHBRC, and we are currently undertaking a strategy to look at our costs and how we can be more efficient in exercising our mandate. Our balance sheet represents the warranty fund, so basically the assets that we invest to protect our housing consumers, as well as then the liabilities that we are then matched to those assets to ensure protection of the housing consumers. Thank you very much for your time. I will hand back to our Deputy Chair to close. Thank you.
Thank you very much, colleagues. Honourable Chairperson, we submit the report for adoption. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Yusuf. No. Move on. Come on, come. Sisos. Is it not Sisos?
No. We ask
that Sisos. Oh. We are going to allow members to ask questions after Sisos, and then we'll come after tea break.
Okay.
You can proceed as you connect. Chair, can you have your remarks? There's a lot of noise. Honourable members.
Chairperson, I'm members of the Portfolio Committee, Minister, Deputy Minister, DG, Chairpersons of entities, CEOs, CFOs, and administrators present. Today we present our APP, and whose bedrock is essentially the success of our core business in dispute resolution, in regulating schemes, in conciliation, in the training of schemes, and in having more PR done, because CISOS has always been this unknown entity. So the bedrock of our APP and our areas of focus are basically those issues. But just to give highlights, we had the business automation system launched last year. It's called CISOS Connect, and it has allowed schemes to interact with us digitally and has allowed them to register themselves without our involvement. This has helped us in increasing our financial viability. It's increased our collection, and we've seen more schemes registering. As such, we've had to then revise our financial statements in terms of how we report. So we are now adopting GRAP 18, and it has been approved by the board and treasury. And we're confident that with a continued success following the organizational structure that was approved by our executive authority, we will be able to resource our entity. At the moment, we are expecting about 40 people to start during the course of this month to ensure that we are able to deliver on this APP. Our other area of focus in the APP is transformation. We have put together a transformation concept document which is currently with our executive authority, and our focus on that one is the training of more managing agents, black managing agents, the enterprise and supplier development getting more focus. We are looking at funding some of these managing agents, and we're also looking at putting together an internship for youngsters to join our entity. One of our biggest wins has been the conversion of interns into full-time employees. And I will now hand over to our acting CEO, Ms. Mbatha, to continue with the presentation.
Thank you, Chair, and greetings again, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee and Chairperson, Honourable Minister. I'll touch on the priorities that our Chair has already indicated on in terms of what the CISOS is contributing towards the MTSS. On priority one, is the Chair has touched on contributing towards the bedrock of operations in terms of a range of governance improvement measures towards achievement of an unqualified audit. Chair, you'll note that in the previous financial year we had a qualification, and as such we've moved to an unqualified audit, and we're aiming to move towards a clean audit, and that has resulted in us changing the way we look at our database for registration to ensure completeness of revenue. On priority two, Chair, it's the job creation that the Chairperson has already touched on. I won't go into the detail, but just touch on the procurement preferential regulations that we have included in our APP. We are targeting to include designated groups, namely 40% we will spend on women on our procurement, 20% we will intend to spend on youth, 5% we will spend on persons with disability. We've also included 5% to be spent on military veterans. Priority 5 includes the special integration routine and settlements, and we are looking at implementing, you know, priority development areas, ensuring that they are also regulated in terms of resources. So when we look at our MTSS indicators in terms of our APP, you know, how we have done since 2019-2022 and the corrective measures we've put in place. So we come from an era where we had about 3,555 schemes that have submitted proper scheme registrations. We are behind, but we're happy to report that the corrective measure is that what we found with the studies we've done over the last year or two, that there are about 70,000 schemes that still need to be registered. But in this financial year, we've registered about 30,000 of those 70. 40,000 are not yet registered, but we are implementing a project called Verification and Validation of Schemes, and we intend to add the additional 40,000 towards the register of schemes at the CISO. In terms of those schemes that we have at the moment, we currently have registered 32,000 schemes. 76% of those schemes are paying their levies at this point in time. We are looking at eradicating unallocated levies and implementation of a billing system that will charge interest to overdue schemes, and also implementing levy paying processes through CISOS Connect. This is the best project that the Chairperson has touched on. So we are also automating the registration of schemes online. We can go on to CISOS Connect and register their schemes. Those that are not complying, we will be enforcing compliance in the year going forward. Also, our contribution to the MTF, what has been happening, we have projected to collect 691 million of CISOS levies. So we've introduced the invoicing of schemes. In the past, we were not invoicing. However, we've managed to collect 352 million, and we project the upward trend going forward with the new registrations that will be coming in. And as well as disputes resolved, we had an error of less than 100% of scheme disputes that were resolved within 90 days. But we have increased capacity, as the Chair has touched on, and we've discontinued the fees that were called dispute resolution fees to assist with the turnaround times of dealing with disputes. These were the 100 rands and 50 rands that schemes had to pay before we assessed their application. So now we've done away with that, and that has given us the rewards that we're looking for. We're already overachieving on conciliation and adjudication. We're sitting at over 90 days, sitting at within 90 days at 100%. When we look at training and education, which is part of our core mandate, we've concluded sessions for scheme executives and owners, and we are continuing annually with our training. to ensure that we reach the targeted audience, which are actually the homeowners and the trustees and the managing agents, as well as the people that are looking after the governance. And we are looking to collaborate with SHRA in terms of training people that have cooperatives, as that is also part of our mandate. On the transformation targets, we're reporting that we've also appointed executive managing agents, which are 41 PDIs, previously disadvantaged individuals, to coordinate the placement in schemes as we receive applications for those schemes that are unable to manage themselves. So to touch on how we are expanding as an organization, we've included targets to open regional offices. There has been an outcry that we are not visible in the market, we're not visible physically in the particular areas that we trade. So we are opening regional offices in Gauteng, KZN, and Western Cape. Two satellite offices were opened last year in Bloem and Zwelitsha, and we're looking at opening satellite offices in this quarter in Polokwane and George to increase our visibility. Chair, just to touch on the contribution that we're doing towards job creation, it's the establishment of the executive managing agent, appointment of the 40 PDIs to the existing panel, and also, Chair, we are looking at panelists on the database for HDI to advance transformation in the sector. We have partnered with Youth in Property Association so that we also bring the young ones into the space. And I've touched on the issues that we are dealing with in terms of preferential procurement so that we feed into that going forward. Chair, if I may, I can skip the strengths and weaknesses.
Because your time is up already.
The Chair has touched on our organizational structure and how we can improve that. I'll also speak on the detail of the target and indicators, jump onto the budget information in terms of how we'll be funding this.
So over the MTF, Chair, we're estimating to receive the following sources of funding as the CISO. In the main, a small portion on the grant, as well as the levy income. As you see, we are estimating 400 million. The interest received as well as other income. And we just intend to distribute it in terms of our core mandates, administration, regulation, as well as education and training. Okay, these are just the slides that talk to the staff costs and operational expenditures. I'll jump on that chair, and we recommend that the portfolio committee take note of the annual performance plan of the CISO.
Thank you very much. Members, there are the presentation. You are welcome to interact with the presentation. Can I have hands to Honorable Malemato, will start, Honorable Kaseni, Honorable Makaseni, and Honorable Sefwai, Honorable Zechi, and Honorable Pete. The Honorable Dr. Kumal, I don't assume that you want to speak, you must raise your hand. Yes, that Honorable Malimasa.
No, thanks, Chair. Let me start with the CISO. It is just few clarity seeking questions after you did a very good presentation. Question will be one, how do you intend to reach those who are in deep rural areas, as you clearly mentioned that you are intending to open these other offices and you were mentioning cities. And it becomes a problem if we keep on ignoring those who are in the deep rural. The other one will be the sustainability plan to sustain the 33, if not 32, that are already recruited and the capacity building on them. Why so that? So that the 40 can see the importance and be attracted and be easy to come so that we are able to fulfill our mandate. Now, the other issue that the Chair, we must time and again when entities are reporting that women are given opportunities, we must be very vocal in giving, saying I mean, giving example of Northwest, where we were told that women are given job opportunities, only to find out when we arrive, women are given very difficult work, where the projects are blocked, there are no even funds, but in terms of the state, it looks like women are given opportunities, whereas women are sent in the lion's den. So I'm just saying, you must also tell us the simplicity of the work you gave and how easy they will be able to accomplish their mission. How many interns of your report that you are intending to convert them into a permanent staff, as you said, so especially this year, because I think it's a very good issue. I mean, it's a very good initiative, but it has to be accomplished by numbers. Now, I will move to NHVRC. At some stage, I was in the parliament, I was debating, and I spoke very well about the NHVRC,
yeah,
which I don't regret. I don't regret, but there are a number of questions that when we were here and they were posed, then it came to my mind that when you saying you have got an inspecting model that you want to come and unpack, I will only be very happy if it's not to unpack alone, but also to demonstrate. Because the model itself must satisfy us that the structure you are leaving there, you have clearly ensured that the work is done accordingly. You have all the necessary tools that can be able to detect if it has to deal with the quality of brick and mortar and the cement itself, including the brick force itself. Until that is done, it means we will be good in talking, but in terms of practicality and the quality of work on the ground is different, and it's not what we are expecting. We want to say NHBRC is monitoring the quality of work on the ground, and indeed it is like that. Unlike where you have been there, there's not even a job code that can trace the job card, so we are able to know who was there, who inspected this as the last person to defend the beneficiary. Yet we are given a structure that within short space of time, that can collapse. I'm saying NHBRC, be clear on the module that you are talking about, because it's one thing that creates a perception that you are producing a lot of corrupt inspectors. Because inspectors must not be just to go and check on site, must be the work that they have inspected and the duration of the work that has to be there. Now, you spoke of your 88 inspectors, though, and your supervisors. I'm trying to check, are you saying the entire country we have only 88 and these six? And if six, we've got 9 provinces. Mm. How do you cover the entire South Africa? Because this can be the another aspect that needs us to say. Unfortunately, you invited all these questions because I thought you are doing very well, especially after we realized that you got a very good audit and you have brought this fully fledged, but you are opening can of worms for others to attack us. Remember, we are in charge here. Yeah, we are in charge. We are in charge.
Parliament is in charge.
Yeah. No, and HDA, the other thing that will really make our people be convinced that we are serious about them and bringing them into the inner city, so to deal with the legal of apartheid, is when we start work, especially in the area such as the SABC C-Point building. The day we start there, people will realize that we are bringing them next to the economy. That must also apply to ESCOM. Now the question is, when are you intending to start doing work? Because now you've got land, you've got something to work on it. Chairperson, allow me to stop there for now. Okay?
Number two.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, the members of the committee. Afternoon, the Honorable Minister and the Deputy Minister. And the Statako HDA report yet. The 2689 hectares of land that has been released for that development
of human settlement by the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, the NDT apprised the committee on location of these pieces of land and whether they are suitable to build human settlement. And what are the source of management revenue to cover the deduction in the budget for 2023 to 2024, and what extent in the proposal budget aligned to the provincial and municipality HHSDG and USDG development plan. In MHB, our numbers, because our people are struggling in their houses that are passing by MHBRC, although the condition is not in a good way. I'm going to CISOS. CISOS does not have policy standard operating procedures, process flows, and in each system enable it to properly account for revenue and account receivable in the absence of such a policy or mechanism. How does the entity account for its levy collection?
Number three.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think my request to CISOS, if they can just do more public participation so that they introduce entity to the community, especially in more rural areas. You know, if you are in a portfolio committee, we don't complain about your entity. We must know there's something, maybe you're not visible. So that you know, at least even if I'm doing wrong, I'm there on the ground, hence there are a lot of complaints. So I'm coming just to say, like the NHBRC, because everyone on the ground will know this, this entity, NHBRC. If houses are not built properly, we'll complain about NHBRC. If there are challenges of the inspectors, whatever, do we know we are going to complain, although we are not happy, but we know there's something. So CISOS, do public participation, go to Kwakwa, go to deep areas so that you educate our people, so that umewa, what's it saying in Kwakwa, knows what it is CISOS and what are the chances, so that we can start introducing it to Marena Aro. So the NHBRC, I acknowledge your plans and the audit outcomes. It is the plans that you are putting in place to overcome and to deal with it. But there are issues that we found, which there are inspectors that really, they are 88, I know, I saw in the Eastern Cape. You found a provincial manager is just going with us, is working in a lot of projects. And we can identify the person is doing the work as a provincial manager. But the inspectors on the different locality, they are not doing what is expected. Because if the work is not the same, in this project we are happy, in that project we are not happy, which means one person is failing to follow up on the project. So how do you intend to intensify, maybe to boost and give the capacity to the provincial managers so that when they do oversight, even if I don't go, I know the work that I got in Amatole, the project that I spoke well about it. The guy, they did what they're supposed to be done. But majority of the project that we come across in the KSD, except Mbacha, maybe it was a new project that is going to start. But literally, in KSD, we are not happy, including themselves. They will say, why did you do this? Then let's call somebody outside. Why did you do this? We didn't do the inspection, all those things. So I think capacity is needed so that you intensify your monitoring and evaluation of your work. Then, and those guys, I think the issue of the bill, as I said before, if the bill can come handy and be implemented by the department, maybe the people who are not doing their work, they will know the loop. They will be disqualified to be the inspectors. They will start to do the work, but the monitoring, on the, you must just improve the issue of the monitoring, because your house is literal. Like the house that we're speaking about of the KSD, where the person who's on the wheelchair,
and the lady who are unable even to do whatever because she's on the crutches. She can't, but they put that lady in that house. And when we ask, why did you do this, then it was a problem. And the issue of educating our people when you give them happy letters, because already a month I got in the house, I started to do my own build, try to block the sewer and everything, and they were not told that we don't do, we are not supposed to do these things. And we asked about the happy letter, they didn't have the happy letter. They were told, just sign, are you happy with the windows? I thought if I don't sign, they won't allow me to get to the house. Hence, I signed. That was the answer that we got to the person. They say I must sign. I say I'm happy with everything because I wanted the house because I've been renting for a long time. Hence, they didn't give me the copy. So if they can give the people their copies so that they understand if they have challenges, they can also make a follow-up to the entity. The NSDA, one of your stakeholders is municipality. And you find, Uguti, you are not working very well with the municipality. For example, the OR Tambo District Municipality complain about the attitude of the NSDA. They don't come to the municipality, even if they call them so that they can find one another. Hence, there's a backlog of the project that are not moving. They said they were told us as a committee that we are intending even to cancel the contract of NSDA because they are not willing to assist us as the municipality. Hence, we have this challenge of the backlog. So that whatever the mandate and the mission of the department they want to achieve, they must achieve. But it can't be you who make the department not to do their work because of your ego, not to want to meet with the municipality. You don't work, you just go to the site in Port St. John's without communicating to the municipality. I don't think the issue of integrated development plan, if that's how we are interpreted, we are doing very well. Let's work with our municipality. Let's support one another. If there are challenges, let's go to the meeting and iron those differences because it's not about us, it's about the people that we are servicing.
There is no
water, there is no tea. Yeah, so
we
but we are going to have a tea break. Don't worry, we'll attend to that one.
Okay. Yes, perhaps HDA would need to make some crash course of their role. We do understand its role, but at another time, we lose how things are happening and how they do things. You listen in my questions as I proceed. You are appointing a service provider to deal with the irregular expenditure. Am I right? Did you say that? Okay. Now, the question is, by virtue of your mandate, you should have a fully fledged institution with all the necessary tools to deal with the issues of possible irregular expenditure. Risk audit, internal audit, and also your management, monitoring and to manage the work of the department. Now, my problem is when we have identified those, you go out to get a service provider to address those issues, whereas internally, you should have those when it happens, they are able to identify which they lose the system. because I had to go to your mandate, the person who you are. The you are saying you are an implementing agent, you are a project manager, developer. I think perhaps the minister is listening. There's a lot that you have to do. And in the process, there could be challenges in the dual operations in how you do things. Are you coping with all of this? My second question, which also is related to that, let's say Nelson Mandela is a developer. You come in, you're a developer, you're project management, you are an implementing agent. But what's happening? Who's who in the zoo? Isn't that a problem? I'm using Nelson Mandela because in 2020-2021, you were not building houses in Nelson Mandela. There was a chaos. Maybe you need also to tell us what happened there so that we have an understanding out of the issue that I'm raising of your possible participation in these issues. You are also raising the issue that there is there's fragmented funding framework in government. There is a lack of alignment in functions. What's that? How are you resolving such issues, which in the first issue that I've raised, there is a possibility to have these problems. Possibility to have these problems that we are having. The question is, how are you resolving all these issues? The other issue, I read the HDA. Let me come to my friend, NHBRC. Take our questions very positive. Remove all provinces. NHBRC, in terms of its responsibility, does not exist. I raise it hard as I'm raising it. It really does not exist. You must tell us how, in the system of a project that is identified by the municipality or by province, by whoever, where are you? Where do you start in the project identification in terms of the spec? Because your role, according to me, it says you must enter immediately on the specification because your mandate is a mandate from the minister to protect consumers 24 hours. Now, the question is, you should start from the spec. The issues that we've seen here in Western Cape, two times, make us to cry. The small bathrooms that are like this, where were you when that specification happened? Regardless of a developer, a big contractor, a big developer, your mandate comes from the minister. And the minister has got norms and standards. And as a person who protects Unozolile tribe, where were you? That's why I'm saying that tell us your system to do the mandate of the national government, because as it is here, there are times without you. You are saying you are empowering a woman. I say Nelson Mandela. I left Nelson Mandela with huge women contractors. I even said to them, you must have four cell numbers. When I left them, they had cars with Banama Villing Empa, the Mafilling Empimotosa, women empowered contractors. As I speak to you now, they are saying to me, Mama, HDA allows contractors and developers, big ones, and China we subcontract. And they've got 20 houses, we're given only two houses. We are not being given independence in terms of managing a project of 20 or 100 as women. What is this empowerment that you're talking about? Tell us. What is it? Because we want women to be equal. They are individuals equally with men. So just tell us this empowerment, because we don't want women to be wheelbarrows, pushy wheelbarrows, boy. We want them to own construction and development. And it is your responsibility also. I raised the issue of, tell us, where do you come in a project? Projects are in a terrible situation. Our people are undermined. Our people are so indignified. You have a responsibility to protect consumers. How do you see your role in this new act, this housing protection, consumer act? How do you
act?
Yes, how do you see your role now? Maybe it was not emphasized before. Your role there is a very serious one. How do you see it now? You are negotiating prices on projects. I get confused. You have to protect consumers. You negotiate when? Where do you negotiate prices? Is it when you have seen that this material is not a quality, and you negotiate with contractors, developers, to have a better price and all those issues? So please tell us, the project of Western Cape, a typical example. Where were you when two women that are disabled, they were given an upstairs house, an approved upstairs house, but they are disabled. And as a result, they are given to, the chair raised the issue before, they are given to sleep in the opening area, in the sitting room, where they are disabled. Where were you, NHBRC, in that situation? Because that project should have not approved for those disabled. And in the process, there are individual houses that are given, normal people, disabled people are given a house which is upstairs, and they are sleeping in an open area, so undermined, and they are women. Where were you? So I'm raising these issues, not that I'm negative, but I'm focusing in your mandate. Your mandate, where are you? Where do you start? Where do you end in a project? Sisters, we have a mandate to promote good governance on committee schemes. How do you do that? I'm imagining a cooperative of many people in the province, schemes that are there. Are you able to build that capacity of good governance to those schemes? And do you have a umzekelo of any scheme that you believe you have tried to build that good governance? Thank you, Chair.
Babu Sek.
Go for it, Nacho.
Go for it.
Thank you, Chair. Just a few points. On the HDA, you have shown us there the budget, there 278. No, 478 if I'm correct. And you've dropped from last year. Last year you were at 508, if I look at the history. What is that reason for the drop? And would, in terms of targets, I've not looked at the targets of last year and this year. What impact would they have in terms of those units? And then maybe it goes back to that question, DM and Minister DG, that that 200 and something and 200 and something you get from both national and province, does it come from the grant that you have allocated to the province? Sorry to ask this question in 2023. Maybe I should have asked it in 2021 there. Pardon me, but I just want to make sure I understand these figures. NHBRC, the issue of crime is what? That means you have dropped the ball somewhere. When you started your inspection, you were doing them under normal conditions because you were doing your due diligence in terms of what the Act and the law says you must do. So somewhere you drop the ball and you allow the unscrupulous people to play in. Now you can't stop them. That's why they are fighting you. So it's a man-made thing, the issue of NHBR. I mean, you have to try. And I think it's something that you need to work hard to convince the community or those people that you are building houses for. No, not building, but monitoring those houses for, that you are there for a good cause. It's about
revival.
You are reviving yourself to be a good citizen, which you are not, for those unscrupulous people to come in. That's my statement. I know you will contest, but this is how I could analyze the rot that you are finding in your environment. Chisos, you know what I like about Chisos? We have never complained about Chisos. And then my sister here says it's probably it's about us not knowing it. And sometimes you are doing good, Chisos, and there's no complaint because you are doing good. But what is important is for us really to know. Yeah, I once asked that if we could have a one-hour workshop with CISOs so that we could understand more. Because immediately when you talk about community schemes, that's very progressive. But unfortunately, we can't feel it. We can't touch it. But they are doing well. We have never complained much about them. So let's appreciate the good work that they are doing. But let's know so that we can also market it ourselves to market this good work that they are doing. Don't worry, Jesus. Thank you very much for the good work. But please come back through the chair to give us a workshop about your work. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. You know, Chair, I think I will just make a general comment to say that, you know, when we look at the statistics, particularly amongst young people who have been assisted or at least have been beneficiaries of some of the programs, the numbers are quite low. And I suppose my first inclination is to ask why. What is the reason? Are there no young people in the sector? Are there no young people who perhaps have the skills? Because you know, for me, you look at the NHDA, 25%, the NHBRC, 16% of youth beneficiaries. It basically says to me that there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. And so I just really want to understand maybe what are the challenges around this particular issue. Is there no opportunities, at least for some form of, if it is an issue of a lack of skills, I don't know, for some form of transversal work to be done with other agencies like the NYDA to empower young people to have these skills so that they can benefit. Because if young people aren't benefiting, or at least are benefiting at such a low rate, in my view, then we are not planning for the future. I think we're planning for, you know, I don't know what, but 16% is not good in my eyes. But to get into the questions that I have, I'll start with the HDA. So one of the challenges that they speak about is, you know, the struggle with acquisitions and finding well-located lands and buying them from the private sector or individuals, and I suppose also the length of time it takes for that land to be released, as well as illegal occupation. So I just wanted to know, in terms of land that is currently perhaps owned by the military bases, how are we doing in terms of trying to acquire that land, which is actually not necessarily in the periphery of these urban centers? But a quick example would be Wingfield, and I'm sure colleagues will be aware of that one. Wingfield, Youngsfield here in the Western Cape, as points in which can be used. Are there other points in which there is those avenues in which that land can be released? Because it seems to be a challenge when it comes to the private sector. So just a question around that. I will then move to the NHBRC, and Chair, you'll remember that we had a brief conversation around some of the issues that I've particularly picked up in different places, like the Lufering project, some also in the Eastern Cape. But I suppose my first question would be, in terms of the disciplinary committee that I think the NHBRC has, what's the effectiveness of the committee in terms of dealing with, you know, housing inspectors who may be found to be doing, you know, things that they should not be doing? I mean, in as much as one can say that there is massive corruption around housing inspectors who go to projects to get a quick buck, there's also threats that they face. Threats of violence, and I think Chair was also telling us about, no, the Minister was telling us about an inspector who was killed. And so one would like to know what type of measures at least have been taken to, one, counter some of the security threats that these inspectors are facing, but more importantly, how do we deal with the massive corruption that is happening with inspectors that are able to sign off projects that are clearly not feasible, are clearly not, you know, right for people to occupy or to even live in, just to get a quick buck or to make some money? So what are the precautions that are being taken around that? Are there lifestyle audits at least being done on these inspectors? To understand whether or not they are benefiting or earning additionally from what they are supposed to. And then just the last question, which will go to the CSOS. I did note the fact that there was a point around developers not necessarily needing to register their schemes when they are about to start the operation of the building. So currently, what do you do to sort of regulate and account for that revenue, since there is no process that is currently within the SOP, I suppose, of the institution? So what exactly are you guys using right now, and how long will it take to develop that particular process in which you can account for the revenue of these particular community schemes in the near future? Thank you, Chair.
Doctor? The first doctor.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I promise I will be the shortest. I think some colleagues have actually covered
some of the points. I'm not sure I literally read a whole thing I wrote here, so I'm convinced you have superpowers. Honorable, so I literally read. I showed Honorable here. I didn't touch my computer. So I'll be very short, Chair. To NHBRC, and I think, Chair, from looking at the presentations that were presented today, rather the content, I think it's a classic case in some cases where you see, you know, great on paper, a completely different story on the ground. I mean, NHBRC, if you read the presentation or you look at the report and you haven't been to the various places that we've been through throughout South Africa, this is brilliant. You're doing great work. You are perfect. I mean, you've got all these bursaries for learners at TVET colleges. You're empowering women on your report. And, you know, there are new inspection model that you're putting in place. Everything looks brilliant. But when you're on the ground and have to, you know, match what's in the report to what people are experiencing that you are working with and, you know, that your recipients, the consumers, ultimately, it's a completely different story. But we do welcome and, you know, note the various interventions that you're putting in place. I mean, I think it's great that you are, you know, enhancing your inspection, you know, models, and you're looking, because obviously it tells us that you at least acknowledge that there's some level of, you know, challenges in that regard. So we welcome that. I think I won't mention a lot of the things around, you know, the experiences of the people, the quality of the houses that we've been through last week. We visited Eastern Cape, you know, and the Western Cape. Unfortunately, I wasn't there. But, you know, if everywhere you go, the quality of what citizens get, it's really sad, because I wouldn't live in those houses, and I'm sure none of us in this room would want to occupy any of those houses that we saw last week. And so just to relate, but I won't carry on. I think the points have been covered, Chair. I think with HDA, again, we welcome, I mean, congratulations, welcome. I mean, we welcome also the fact that you've made a commitment in front of all of us, including the Minister, that you are not getting a qualified audit ever again. So congratulations also on the progress that you've made, I suppose. Recognition needs to be given where it is due. I did have a question that Mam Sifrai, around the SCM, and, you know, the entity hiring an agency to just ensure that you're not hiring the wrong people, or specifically people that are doing business with the state or, you know, under the employ of the state. For me, those are capacities that any entity should have. At least some basic vetting mechanism in an institution is expected. So I was going to ask around capacity of the institution and... if really that is a necessary cost for the entity. Chair, I think I'll end there. I don't have a question for CSOS. I'll echo that Dipsiki in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I also didn't have any question to ask, but I think the point that needs to be raised is the NHPRC is the issue of the quality of the houses. I'm not sure if there is a mechanism to hold someone accountable to the extent that we can at least say from here going forward there will not be the kind of problems of shoddy work, which is what is, I think our biggest concern is how government is to go back and correct some of the houses that have had, you know, poor supervision. And if there is any problem of collusion of anyone else on the ground, but at least there should be a technical team of experts that you can rely upon to be able to get that situation corrected. The inspections that the NHPRC it's talking about, we just wonder at which point are we able to say the situation is safe enough for all our people. But it does look like from the administrative supervisors there's a lapse from the competence
of the contractor, there is also a problem. But then the independent institution that is supposed to be able to stop the process before it goes too far is the NHBRC, which we really, I think we were struggling on the ground to find a mechanism to make them more effective so that certain of these lapses can be prevented. I think that's our biggest issue. I don't know if there is a mechanism to, and let me just think an extreme approach, which says if government has to put in money to go and rectify a house that should have been inspected and the contractor should have actually been asked to rectify at his own cost immediately, to find it afterwards when the BRC has gone through it, can the government turn around and say, okay, you guys are going to foot the bill, so that, you know, this kind of thing, everybody knows it can't happen again. It's another issue where you've got someone who's coerced, like we have indicated. That I think is a criminal matter which does need, you know, a lot of support. But we're just trying to find out what is the best way around this, because it looks like it's a very widespread practice. And so that for me is an area which we really, or I think I'm probably the third or fourth person to raise the thing, but it's not the one that you feel like you are covered if one person has asked. It's like it's something that we should put in different ways so that the point can be understood, that it's a very serious concern that we see on this one. I don't have the other questions on the other aspect, on the other entities.
Doctor?
I'm so sorry, Chair. I realize I've skipped something. So what I did want to request from NHBRC Chair was, you know, I think as public works we've heard many times, not in the last week oversight, but in other oversights, a lot of, in the public hearing, I mean, public hearings with the bill, etc., a lot of people don't know how to get hold of you, some how to make use of your services, and I see you've got a lot of, community engagement plans according to your report. So if we could get a layout of the plan so we can, as public reps, assist you to get word out that NHBRC is coming to this particular area so that we can also get our constituencies out there so they can know about you and, you know, people can actually understand how they can eventually ultimately benefit from you or how they can get assistance from you. So just that one request if through you, Chair, if you don't mind. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Doctor. Let me raise the issue that I've raised when I was appointed the chair of Water Human Settlement, Water and Sanitation, or Human Settlement, Water and Sanitation, when we started. I said to, because e-water had an irregular expenditure of 16 billion. Is irregular, wasteful, and what?
Irregular,
wasteful and fruitless of 16 billion, which was equal to their budget. They had the 300 million accrual. The first meeting that I've raised with those entities in water, which I'm raising today with Human Settlement, that you don't have constitutional mandate to exist. You exist based on the minister's interests, because you have to perform a particular task. And honestly speaking, we don't see that. So we I'm not going to repeat what other members have raised, particularly with NHBRC, because if you are unable to assist the minister to provide the quality assurance that is needed for her to build quality houses. Why do we exist? And therefore, it's important that this message should be taken, of course, with a good faith, because tomorrow, Minister, when he says, I don't need you, I rather have my own monitoring technical capacity in my office as a portfolio committee, would actually say, you can go ahead, Minister. You it's true that you are not get assisted by this entity. You are not independent from the department. Therefore, it's important that we perform what we are established to perform. I thought I must raise that. I've raised it with water entities, and the Honorable Deputy Minister will remember, and I asked them that in the next meeting they must come and give us a reason why Minister must not dissolve them. So I don't want... I'm raising it with you entities, even those that are still going to present, that you are established to perform a particular task, and if you are unable to implement that task, why do we exist? Welcoming your presentation, we hope that indeed this what we are presenting is going to assist the department to achieve what they intended to achieve. Because your achievement is the departmental's achievement. I welcome the digitization of your services, NHBRC, but I just want to check because it to address the problem that in other provinces you don't have offices. And when we had the public hearings, I consistently asked your representative that it's important that he took all the issues that are raised by public those public hearings and assist you to plan for the future, because the task that is lie ahead of yourselves as an entity is going to be huge responsibility. If that act can be finalized this term, the first seventh term of parliament will be expected to implement with the 6 supervisors and 9, is it 9?
Something.
No, supervisors are 6. There's a 6.
60.
Hi. Nitin, 6
again. How many?
Supervisors. 6.
Your chief is the correct number of...
So, and you've got 6.
Oh,
I've heard them. And we then said, when you plan, please must go even to minister and say the task that we have to implement, it needs more inspectors, it needs more supervisors, engineers, whoever, and all those things, and so that it can inform your organizational structure. Northern Cape, there's no offices. And there's another province that you don't have. You've got only 7 offices throughout the country in terms of provinces. In Northern Cape, they have to go to... They're saying somebody comes once in a while in a, yeah, and which is a problem. So I'm still saying you exist to provide the quality assurance for the houses that government has to build to to our people. And if you are unable to perform that, then it's a problem. But we welcome this digitization because it will then assist even people of Northern Cape for them to be able to access your services. You know, the minister, the other contractors that attended the public hearing, the question that they have asked, that we are expected to register with NHPRC this amount of money. You can register for 10 years without getting any project. Is it fair for us as contractors? And my question is, will then be to the department to say, how do we make sure that provinces appoint contractors that have registered with NHPRC? Do we have that linkage that to check whether the contractors appointed have registered with the NHPRC? HDA, I want to join Dr. Khumalo to welcome the progress that we have made. There were several meetings that we have boxed you, and you can see the appointment of CEO and other teams. There is a progress, but the the issue that I didn't get it very clear, CEO, was the at some point you were raising that because of the budget, you are unable to perform. You say you admire to be a developer of choice, but because of the budget, you are unable to to do that. And I remember we had a very robust engagement on that, on the recapitalization of HDA, using the land as your capital to be able to invest or acquire services that will make you that developer of choice. And I didn't get it very clear, but probably because of your summarized your presentation, I've got the interest just to want to hear how far you have moved to that. I know they clap hands for you for all the good work that you have done, but these gated communities of yours, they do as they wish. They steal money, no monitoring, and your adjudication processes, you go where you don't fear them, where they are white bosses, you don't go there. Is it true? Because there's that allegation that we have received from our offices. So, because I think it's important that, again, at some point, entities go back to their original mandate. Why were you established? Whether are you performing towards achieving that mandate? Because if we are not able to, in 20, 30 years, we are unable even to transform the property relations in the country in terms of acquiring, in terms of management, in terms of inclusivity and all those things, then we are not doing, we are not progressing. I think I've heard that you've established it. Is it transformation committee? Just to elaborate, what is it that what are you going to do to transform the property relations in the country? So those are the few questions that we had. You can see that there are few because we have taken all of them to the minister. and in the beginning of the meeting, Minister, you can respond to the question.
Thanks. I'll ask the entities. I'll come at the end. Let me ask them to respond based on the thing. Let's start with HDA.
Okay. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honourable members. From Dr. Mkhize, there was no question for HDA, so we can take it that way.
Yeah, just go to the issues, don't waste time, Chairperson.
Right.
We still have other entities. Just go to the areas where you are allowed to and shame amongst your team.
All right, okay. In terms of the question that was asked by Honourable Member Tiffany, the issue of budget will be addressed by the CEO, as well as the sources of income for development of land. The CEO will assist with that. And the parcel of land pertaining to the budget. In terms of the questions that were asked by the Honourable Member the CEO will assist with the question of the relationship that is not so good with Port and John. Since HDA and Port and John, the CEO will assist with the response to that. And then the poor relationship between ourselves and HDA and our Tambo municipality, and that has led to the backlog and also the our Tambo municipality wanting to pull out on the commitment. So the CEO will assist with that. In terms of the question that was asked by Ms. Shwai, the role, the CEO will assist in terms of the role specifically, and then also as to how it was, and then the primary mandate that we are introducing, the CEO will outline that. And then there was also a question in terms of, from Minister Shwai, in terms of regular expenditure, and us having a service provider. Why are we having a service provider? Are we not debating from our mandate? So the CEO will assist with that one. And then also the project that was held, Chief of Nelson Mandela, between the colleagues among ourselves, will respond. We'll have to do Neville training will assist with that one in terms of what happened at Nelson Mandela. There was also the question, I think it was directed to NHDRC, but I think it touches on us as well, in terms of women contractors, because we also support an obligation to make sure that we develop the women within the construction space, and then maybe Tehi will assist with that question. Honourable Member Tehi, wanted to know why did we drop our target, and I think that it came up in the presentation that was done by Mr.
Chairperson, you're going to get me in trouble, okay. What you're doing. You see, members are agitated now. Allow the others to answer. We've taken note, we know who asked what.
Okay.
Can we save time for the committee?
All right, okay.
Thank you, Chair. thank you, Chair and Honourable Minister. Chair, we will respond to some of the questions on my side. In terms of the inner city, the issues of SABC and ESCOM, I think we are moving very quickly on that one. What we have done, Chair, we have already done a funding model. It will obviously just supposedly speak to the question that the Chair raised towards the end in terms of the recapitalization. Given the fact that, Chair, the first choice would have been for us to be recapitalized so that then we've got the land, we can then move it quickly. But given the challenge that there's no recapitalization, what we are moving towards, and then I think what we are looking at is to say, one of the models that we're looking at is to say, let's look at, because we come with the land, we come with so we look at it from our side to say, let's use that as our capital, and then let's also go for the debt.
But remember, we are a Section 3A. So to the extent that we've got those limitations of a Section 3A, there are a number of limitations that we are looking at. One of those is the HPV. Obviously, I was speaking to the CEO of NHBRC to say one of the issues that we might be looking at is off balance sheet borrowing using the SPV. So we are looking at a number of those. I don't want to granularize them deeper. The minister has also given us a marching order to say, guys, this thing can't be spoken to every year. You speak about being a developer of choice, but nothing is happening. So I can safely say for the SABC building and for the ESCO building in Joburg, we have done a funding model. We just need now to work on crystallizing the model and we move. So I think on the two of them, Chair, is that we are moving very quickly towards them. In terms of the how we work with the municipalities, we form part of the human settlement, obviously, Chair. And then as part of the human settlement, we form part of the sector development plans that are done by the IDPs of the municipalities. So to that extent, we are part of them as the ADA. So when the land is identified, the challenge with the ADA is that we buy land on the demand of the municipality or the department to say this is the land that we want. But you'll remember that the PDAs have already been identified. These are the PDAs. So if you buy land, you might buy land, but it might not be a PDA. So to that extent, we then work towards the land that we buy. They will say to us, this is the land we want, this is where we're moving. But it might not be moving really towards the PDA. So that's where the challenge is for us. And they are the ones who will tell us this is the land that we want and this is how we want to move. That is why if you look at our APT, we have raised the issues of rezoning because we are dependent on them financially for allowing us to do the rezoning. But also with the advent of Pluma, we're sitting with the challenge that most of the municipalities don't have the MTP, so they don't approve as quickly as they should. And that on its own creates a problem for us. So that's one other issue that we're looking at. But from the sources point of view, I think it's covered in the source of income that we have for the buying of land comes from the department and from the municipalities. What we have done is that in most of those where we bring the handling fee, we also ask them to give us the handling fee. But we negotiate also with the municipalities to say this land really is meant for, if you remember the indigenous policy in the municipality, so we take that into consideration to say this land was really meant for social housing. So to the extent that it's for social housing, the municipality wouldn't have made money out of it because the indigenous policy would have shifted. So what we've been doing is that we negotiate with the municipalities to also give us a routine where we are buying land so that we don't have exorbitant holding costs. So we try and reduce the holding costs in that way. But most of their integrated human settlement sector plans, we participate in those sector plans. So there wouldn't be one or two, because you see the difficulty that we're dealing with is that we're dealing with a DDM, and then it's still a new issue for everybody, so there's no understanding. There is an understanding, but maybe the appreciation with all of us in terms of what it is that it needs to achieve is where the challenge is. Because if you look at it now, in OR, for example, there's a challenge between OR and KFD. For example, if I granularize it further, is that in the KFD, we've got PRTs that are appointed by KFD, but they appointed them on the rates that are higher than the rates that of the grant. So to that extent, we are now sitting with the challenges to how do we then deal with the issue. So when they come and report to the honourable members.
CEO, please don't use abbreviations. Me and you understand them.
Oh.
Members are whispering. What is PRT?
Or let me just say consultant.
Professional services.
So to that extent, then we have that problem because they have to oversee the project. But now our projects are not moving because we're sitting with a situation of if your project is to move, you must first make sure that our consultant is being done good. But then the consultant, the amount that they were appointed for is higher than what the grant allows. So that is the challenge that we're sitting with OR and KSD. So that's where our challenge is. I've been there myself. The Honorable Minister introduced me to the MNC of Human Settlements. I've met with the Honorable MNC. We tried to resolve that issue. So it's not like there's no bad blood. I think it's just a matter of we're trying to find each other. And it's a bit of a challenge because I'm finding them, but I'm saying I can only find you within these parameters because those parameters are predetermined by the grant. So that is where maybe the challenge is in terms of that. And maybe whilst I'm there, I can just as well talk to the Port St. John's. Because in the Port St. John's, if you go to Port St. John's, Honorable Minister and the Chair, you'll find that we've got one house there in Port St. John's. And then our project is supposed to finish at the end of May. But the challenge that we are sitting with is Port St. John's is that when we did the analysis of the area, there were 74 households that were in the flood line. And then, unfortunately, the people didn't want to move. But the land adjacent to it can only accommodate fewer households, but they want to move as all of them. But that land that is adjacent is owned by the municipality. But to move to a land that can accommodate all the 374, you then is a private owned land, but we have to buy that land. So the negotiations are that we want to buy the land. I've spoken to the HOD to say, HOD, can you buy us this land so that then we can move everybody to that land. So that is where the challenge is. That's one. But two, if you remember, we are building TRUs. So the community comes and then they say, no, we want 30%. But the problem with the temporary residential unit is that it actually applies because what you do there is just the supply of the material and then you just put it together. So if they say they want 30%, it becomes difficult. It's not like if I'm building a multi-purpose center, for example, I can say to you, I'm giving you 30%, this is what the 30% is. But in this case, there's no 30% because the whole amount is one amount in terms of supply, because it's a supply tender. So that is where we've had challenges. What we have done is that most of those issues have been agreed to now, Honorable Member. If you go there, you'll find that those issues have been resolved. What we are now dealing with is that from our side, we have now allocated two full-time engineers in Port St. John's. So when you go there, there are two full-time engineers from HDA who are making sure that we're moving. We had a challenge, a simple issue of if you have to get material. Because of the distance, the material was becoming a problem. Which then also, because remember we're working with Quantum, the material then didn't make sense. And then running that didn't make sense because then you're moving from Jovec. So from the cost-benefit, contractors were also not key. But now the contractor that we have, he said, I will work with the local people, but then I have to bring the material. So now they brought all the material that is needed. For us now is just to do the management of the project. And then I think what we will do periodically will give the Honorable Minister the report, and then the Minister can share the report with the committee to say this is where we are in terms of the building. But we did not move away from our time of the end of May. So we're still comfortable that we will make the time of May. We just needed to deal with the teething problems of all the issues of what is 30% and so forth in terms of that. So the issue of Port St. John's, Honorable Minister, I think that it's covered. I agree that maybe at some point we need to look at the issue of the role of HDA, purely because HDA at the center is to be a transformation agent for the human settlement. So to the extent that it's doing that, it takes a posture of a schizophrenia at some point, and I agree. That we need to look at it and say, at what point do we then say that there's a conflict of interest and so forth. But because of the Act has just clarified it very well, we are able to work where we say, in this project, we are the program manager. In this project, we are the implementing manager. So we can't be a project manager and a program manager in one project. So to that extent, we've identified our role very well. But at the center of it, we are saying that we want to be the player in this space so that we can influence it. But when you go further, to respond to that question is to then say, for us to be a developer of choice, it will have assistance to say, there's no any other way that a young, black, just qualified person will stay in the SABC building where it is, except if we come up with a model that we can come up with, because that's the only way that it will add intensity to that. So to that extent, that's why the developer becomes very critical also, to say we must also not just be outside players, but we must be inside and be the player. So to that extent, I think that conflict is managed in a very proper way, in that way. I think the issue that has been raised of how do we use the issue of the cash basis vis-à-vis the, I think it was a very, it's more complex and more challenging for us than you know, it would just look. Because what we were saying is that when the department sends us the money, from the department's point of view, because they are cash based, they've expensed, so they've done the work in terms of it. But when you do value creation, you go and say, let's look at the value. There was no value because the money is still sitting with me. I must still do the procurement and so forth. But the ex says to me, baby, you can't go out and do procurement unless you've got money in your account. So that part was where the difficulty is. And then in our discussions with the AG and the National Treasury, we then said, let's also bring in a consultant who will give us almost a model of how we might work. So it's not to tell us that this is a wasteful expenditure, or it's not to tell us this is irregular expenditure, but it's just to say, what model should we use so that we cover both areas? So we've come up with that model. So the consultant at that time was just to help us with almost what we can say a corporate framework. So we came up with a corporate framework. That's what they've done. They are in and out. So now we are left to do the work ourselves. So it's not something that you should be worried maybe to say we are going to have this consultant continue with us. It was just to give us a corporate framework. We've got that framework, and to that extent, I think we cover. So the other issue that I needed to deal with, just supposedly to that, is the issue of the consultants who come and look at whether people who do business with government. So we've got a system, because it's a very complex issue. If I'm sitting with the chair now, I might have a business with the chair, but the chair has had a business with Mr. Songezo before. And then when he tendered, it will then show someone else who has done business with Mr. Songezo, who is not the chair and it's not me. So that is where the difficulty was. But then we wanted to understand, how do you get to that? Because the simpler one of me and the chair, I can identify it. Then we wanted to understand, which one do they use? Then they use a system called CAT. But that system called CAT, what it does, it goes to housing, Home Affairs. It goes to Home Affairs. It goes to Home Affairs, and then it can then identify that no, this ID number is the ID number of the chair of HDA who's done business with so long time ago, and then they can link them and say, but the chair is influential because he's the chair of the HDA. So because of that, we didn't have that system and we didn't have that capacity. So that's the system we're talking about now. To say, we went and said we want actually that system now that can go all that which we couldn't get. To say this is where the challenge is, because we were struggling with it after having done the desktop one in front of us, but we didn't understand why we're not catching some of this. But then they said, no, your system is not geared enough to get what we do not have in front of your eyes. So that's why we went for the system. So I will leave my colleague to talk about the issue of the SANDF and the land. But let me just give a synopsis, Chairperson, to say that we've got an issue in Philippi, and we went for the land there. We identified the land and we want to move on for that. But this issue of now the military came as a shock treatment, and the shock treatment was after the minister then said, I will make 111 million available for you to buy land, because that was the issue, to say the PRASA issue, the issue there was that there's no money to buy land. So the minister then I was saying to my team, when you sitting in the beach and then we're standing and then there's water come, the water comes underneath your, you know, when you never know when it's, and then you are about to fall. So when that happens, that's when the issue of the military came. But the issue of the military, we need to look at it very carefully, because it's got a lot of conditions to it. The one is that that land is not necessarily owned by government. It's owned by government, but owned by the Graaf Trust. So the trust has the last say as to whether they can give. And they say where they are involved, if the land is not used for military issues, they need to be involved first and be given the first right of refusal. They can then sell it. So it's not a foregone conclusion in terms of that. So all of those permutations are there, and then that's what we've been looking at. We came here last time to deal with the very same issue, specifically to say, you've said that you've got land, you want to issue it to us, give it to us. But part of the 10.5 that we've shown there in terms of the 10.5 hectares is part of the land that we are negotiating. So I think to that extent, Chairperson, some of this, we've looked at them. I think my CFO will respond to them. I left CFO there, one of the SCM and the 478. And then I've responded to recapitalization. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll just quickly deal with the issue of the capacity within the SCM unit, as well as whether is it necessary for us to, was it necessary for us to appoint a service provider to address the issues of the irregular expenditure. Chair, I think when we came in last year, in the middle of last year, Chair, we found that for the past 4 or 5 years, the irregular expenditure was not dealt with, and in the register we're sitting with a total of 181 cases of irregular expenditure, and we can report that to date we have achieved, or we have finalized reports, 84% of that. And then in terms of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we had 19 cases. And all those cases have been addressed to date. So, Chair, due to the capacity within the SCM, we found that there are in key positions there were they were vacant, and we are still in a process, since our organizational structure was only approved now in March. I think that's it's only now we are filling those posts, Chair. And then on the issue of the drop in the budget, Chair, I just want to indicate that from the department, in the 2022-23 financial year, we received, in the previous year, yes, we received 242 million, and for the current year, we're expecting to receive 243 million. So there's not much change on that. And then, but with the grants from the provinces, in the previous year, what was budgeted was 240 million, and in total, the initial budget was 508 million, and we noticed that during the adjustment budget, because now we need to go back to the operations as well as provinces, that budget reduced greatly, because now other projects were withdrawn by the provinces, or they indicated that they do not have funds for those projects. So that's why now that budget dropped. And then chair for this year, as I've indicated, we only expecting to receive 228 million. And also, chair, in our when we did our procurement plan, we had to do a thorough job because previously we noted that our procurement plan was sitting at 4.3 billion. And now it has been reduced to 1.3 billion because previously there were projects that were not funded, included in the procurement plan. So now we had to do that, a thorough job, make sure that there's funding agreements in place, the MTOPs in place, so that at least it's proper. Thank you, Chair.
Maybe just to wrap up on the issue of the land and the military land, perhaps, Chair. It was unfortunate, and I know we've had battles with DA on the matter in the Western Cape. How it started is that the land parcels were part of the 14,000 land parcels that DPWI identified to say they will transfer. But they had done that without consultation with the Military Veterans Department. When that land parcel was then identified, and when we were trying to get the land transfer in the Western Cape on a number of others, they decided not to agree with anything else that we're doing but focus on the military land. I'm learning today that actually even private sector was interested. I was not aware that private sector was interested in the land parcel, because our intention was that it would be utilized for human settlement purposes, especially in the work that we do. So where we are sitting with that particular land, Chair, is that Cabinet has taken a decision to withdraw those land parcels from the allocation of the human settlement. You'd have seen my statement during the budget vote debate, SONA debate. If you look at my debate in SONA, I speak to this matter in terms of where the land parcels have been identified, how much has been already transferred, and also what is outstanding. So those land parcels that Honorable Mpiti was making reference on are out, are no longer in the issues for human settlements. Maybe Neville Cheney can deal with exactly, because there was a question about exactly which land parcels are already in the hands of HDA.
Thank you. Honourable Chair, Minister is correct. There is a list. I think we've made that available. We can do that to the Minister of the 14,000. How much has been released? Where it's been released? What it is being utilised for? Which province? Which municipality? And what the projected yield is? Just to cover the issue around the question of specifically Youngsfield and Winsfield, there's been this issue around, well, there's a refusal by government to want to do that. The way the system works at the moment is that all departments which are core utilize the land, and they retain that land. Only once that department decides it does not want the land does it then revert to DPWI. In the case of Wingsfield and Youngsfield, those pieces of land were made available, as the CEO raised, by the Graf Trust for military purposes. Specifically for military purposes. If it stops being utilized for military purposes, it then reverts back to the trust, and if government wants to then utilize it, we've got to purchase it. And that's where this issue is coming up. But military have not said that they don't want to. And Youngsfield, there's military intelligence. I mean, I think it's quite sensitive information, so they're not in a position to decommission that. Chair, I'll just cover the point of Member Shishwai on the issue around the role of the HDA in the Nelson Mandela Bay. In the case of Nelson Mandela Bay, between 2017 and around 2020, the HDA was the implementing agent on behalf of the province and or the municipality, that Nelson Mandela Bay. It was on the basis of an agreement that was concluded with National, Province, the HDA, as well as and the Nelson Mandela Bay. Member Shwai will know that there was substantial progress. There was quite a lot of delivery that occurred during that period. Then the implementation protocol came to an end. It terminated, and the HDA then stopped and ceased doing any work because it was not appointed to do any work on behalf of in Nelson Mandela, either by the province or the city. So we didn't do any work there. Only recently, during the current term, in the last, I think it's in the last 6 weeks, where the province has then asked us to intervene on a few projects which are blocked, and we can then look at that. But those projects, up until about 6 weeks ago, the HDA was not involved in any projects in Nelson Mandela Bay constructing or servicing or stand since 2018. Thanks, Chair.
Maybe just to indicate, I just found the information. It's 32 land parcels measuring approximately 10,350 that are left. Out of those, 91 land parcels are no longer available for transfer to us, which will take about 920 hectares. And this 91 land parcels are owned by both the Department of Defense and also the Department of Police. And some of them are actually were found not to be state-owned entities that were in the custodian of private-owned or other spheres of government that were still going to be worked on, Chair. So just to indicate, and we do have the list of those in areas per province. For example, in the Western Cape is in three areas, Saldanha, in Stellenbosch, and the Waterkloof. Those are the ones that are outstanding for us to get. And then we would have, in terms of Mangaung, in Free State, Dannhauser in KZN, and Dumeni in KZN, Mtubatuba, Makado, and David Cook. Those are the areas that are left for us to be able to receive the areas in terms of land parcels to be transferred. We'll move to the next entity. I don't think there's much for CISOs, but I'll give them to respond.
I take this opportunity to welcome the notion or the suggestion that we have an hour's debrief and tell you what we do at CISOs and how we do it. We will arrange with the Secretariat to do that. Regarding the issue of the Transformation Committee, let me mention that this has been elevated within the CISO structures. In fact, it is now part of the conversation within the Social and Ethics Committee that we constituted last year. So we are giving it all the attention. However, our CEO will talk to that, our Acting Chief Ombud will talk to that. Let me say that we are tracking the performance of our conciliators and arbitrators, and we are checking for quality of their decisions, the quality of the resolutions they come to through the number of complaints, and we're zooming in on those provinces or those offices of ours where we are getting a lot of complaints. And so the matters that were raised with the Winelands bosses is getting our attention as an entity. But the Acting Chief Ombud will take us through some of the issues that you raised.
Thank you, Chair. Not to finish all the time, I'll just deal with the questions as they started. In terms of how we intend to reach rural areas, I think it's important also to just highlight that in terms of a scheme, we mean schemes in an arrangement where there's shared use of property and land. So it's all those gated communities. They haven't necessarily reached our rural areas per se, but mostly the cities tend to find the province, the offices being opened in more the cities and less the rural areas. But with our collaboration that we'll be doing with SHRA, as they're looking at social housing communities, we'll make sure that we get involved at the inception so that the problems we see in the cities we don't get to see then in the rural areas. When looking at the women spend that we do, just to look at the last quarter, we spent about 42% of our 25 million rand spend on procurement. We spent that 42.5% on women in quarter four. That's about 10 million rand of that spend. And in terms of the services that we're looking at, it includes travel, includes HR training, professional services, as well as ICT and this verification and validation project that we intend to roll out nationally of finding and looking at these schemes. The number of interns that we've intake so far, just in the last quarter, to report that we've had about 7 interns that we've translated into permanent positions. So as they come in, we take them in. There's the issue of revenue and our standard operating procedures and how we account for the revenue. This has been an issue of contention with our previous audit, hence we had a qualification as a CISO. But we've since revised our accounting policy on revenue recognition. We only recognize revenue from schemes that are registered in our database. That is to just deal with the issue of completeness of revenue when it comes to that. But we are looking at expanding that in terms of training and rolling out some of the compliance that we are doing in the scheme. And on
you didn't have a lot from your side, but you're taking long. If you can wrap up.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Minister, just to wrap up on the issues of transformation, which I think we're permeating a lot, we are looking at some initiatives, external factors include partnering with managing agents, collaboration with PPRA on enrollment of candidates and property practitioners, and funding candidates for fidelity funds, as well as collaborating with Trust to place some of the candidates that we have. So Chair, I'll just pause with that. As the Chair has indicated, we will welcome a session to deal with that.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to just refer to the high-level matters and the specific questions to the CEO. Thank you to the 9 members for the input. We appreciate the comments. We also note with serious concern the issues you've raised with your inspection in loco. And I think if those issues has got to do with the 5-year warranty or is part of the core business of an organization, we will look into that and report back to the committee on that. In terms of the current legislative model, the CEO will refer to that. Then in terms of the inspection model, maybe just again the new envisaged model, the CEO will refer to that. I just want to correct the numbers. The 88 refers to the senior members of the inspectorate. The 6 are the top supervisors, and the total in the country itself is 225. But the 88 is your senior members. Then in terms of the questions and concerns raised by members, there's 2 issues that's coming to the fore: supervision and consequence management. And I think the council and the management take note of that, especially with regard to performance management. If provincial managers do not supervise and there's not proper feedback, that's a matter for supervision and consequent management, performance management. The CEO will have to address that. Then also not performing their duties, that was raised by members. That's again, there was a proposal also for M&E that I think is a very good proposal, how we can take that forward, and also disciplinary action. There was also a question raised regarding what is the disciplinary committees. It's independent chairpersons, but the CEO will refer to that. Members also refer to what extra tools can be initiated to ensure that there is sufficient exercise of their duties by the inspectors. That will also go to the model, and then also the question of percentage business to women. Acting CFO will do that. And then a big issue, Chairperson, that came to the fore in the discussion this afternoon is the absence of maybe an issue to debate is of a complaints mechanism, because we've heard a lot of these issues. If those complaints do not come through the system to management or to council or even to parliamentary oversight, that raises questions. So that's an issue that we will have to address. And then lastly, the new bill. A lot of members raised, what is the difference? What will be the opportunities? And maybe the CEO must also deal with the task teams that's been established internally to look at the issues. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Deputy Chair. Good afternoon again, honorable members. I think at the center of what we do as an HBRC is the protection of the housing consumer. That's number one, by ensuring that we deliver the delivery of quality homes. So in that, we've got our inspectors who play a function. There are other role players as well there, like the builder as well, is part of that assurance function. So I think what we need to do, I think hence we had to revise or go back to the drawing board in the terms of reviewing the inspection model is to look at the roles and responsibilities, the policies and procedures that we have, standardization across all provinces. So the question asked by Honorable Sifuai, in terms of where do we fit in at the NHPRC in the value chain, we need to be part of the process from the planning stage up until the completion. So what we've seen through engagements with provinces is that there are gaps, procedures are not standardized across provinces. So hence there has been a need for us to engage provinces in working towards ensuring that our processes are standardized across provinces. The other issue that was raised was around the warranty certificate that we provide. Currently we issue what is called an FUR, which stands for a final unit report. So through engagements at technical MINMEC and MINMEC as well, we are working towards issuing now warranty certificates for all of these houses that we've issued warranties for as the NHPRC. The other issue that was raised was around the security threats on site. We've had instances where inspectors have escalated that to management to a point where we've had to engage law enforcement agencies to deal with some of those cases. We had a few in KZN, I think one or two in Gauteng. So we are looking at partnering with law enforcement agencies to deal with those security threats on site. Now, in terms of the new bill that we are currently anticipating, that one is going to enhance the regulatory function of the NHPRC in the sense that it provides us more teeth in terms of ensuring that we implement our role as a regulator, in that it enforces, it ensures that there are stricter fines that are issued to all non-compliant home builders. It also introduces new functions in HPRC in the sense now we only provide warranty to newly built homes. So in instances where there's an alteration or an extension to a home, the warranty will extend to that. Quite important, honorable members, is that if you look at the current act as is now, the warranty kicks in from date of occupation. However, if you look at the bill proposes that the warranty will kick in from date of construction to ensure that there is implementation of quality assurance from construction. The other question that was raised was around lifestyle audits on our inspectors. I think through the engagements that we've had today and having listened to the members, I think there is a need for us as the NHPRC management, and also will convey that through the Deputy Chair to Council, that perhaps it will need to be an approach that is adopted by Council where all inspectors that the NHPRC employs will have to undergo a lifestyle audit. And also to look at the issue of capacity within the inspector division, we are looking at introducing a hybrid model where we are looking at bringing additional capacity now through employing service providers who will assist the NHPRC where we are found wanting in terms of capacity. The other issue that was raised was around the engagements that the NHPRC will be having provincially with consumers. I think that we will then submit that plan through the committee secretariat so that the committee is aware where the NHPRC will be having those engagements across provinces. I think, Chair, to summarize, I think the biggest issue basically that has been raised is around quality on site and how the NHPRC ensures that there are checks and balances to ensure that then we are not found wanting in terms of the delivery that we are expected to be monitoring. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I think, Chair, in regards to NHPRC, let's commit this way, that we'll do a proper assessment of our provincial offices, both in terms of capacity, in terms of inspection, and also in terms of stakeholder management. Because from where I'm sitting, the flagging on issues that members have raised are speaking to those two issues. And then we'll provide a report, written report, which the council will have to submit to me, for me to submit to you, in where we identify gaps, what is it that we are doing? Because I don't think, as members were saying here, that on the paper it looks different, but when you went on oversight, there was quite a lot of issues. And it does speak to our work in the provinces, in terms of our regional offices, because I think from national would be fine, because it's not the first time members have raised this. The DM has raised it previously. I've had challenges, and we tried to intervene in some of those areas, but it does speak to an overall assessment of the work that we need to do. Maybe in concluding this area of work, Chair, when I began in the morning, I spoke about we are one of the portfolios that Cabinet has asked us in this financial year to do a repurposing and restructuring of the entities to identify where there are duplicates and where there are issues. And the entities, know, I've always said, I echo your sentiments, I've said to them, we don't exist, all of us, including myself and the department, by force. We've got to make sure that we exist and we prove ourselves why we must continue to exist. So we do understand that, Chair, we accept that, but it's not automatic that Parliament must appropriate money to us. It's not automatic that Parliament must support the existence of this portfolio together with its entities. We must prove the worth of our existence in this portfolio. So we'll definitely do that and respond, report to you. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister, for your closing remarks, and thank entities and chairs that were able to come to Cape Town to brief us as committees. I don't want to close for members because we see you.
Three more chairs.
No, no. Hey, I'm chairing. I don't. No, I'm not closing. Yes, I'm trying to say that I don't want to close this part. If members they want to follow up. Because I don't want to be accused of closing for members when they will still have follow up. But if there is no hand, DM, you want to raise issues after the minister has closed? Because your minister has spoken, you're supposed to say, Minister, let me talk before you. So,
sorry,
yeah.
Sorry,
can I close?
The proper assessment, Mr. Minister, is talk about
no.
Checking.
Dear, I'm saying, you go vanilla and a pack.
Vanilla and
yes, because you're supposed to come in when before the minister. You will have an opportunity when we deal with the last entity, unless if members wants to raise a follow up, then Zagusiza there. Oh, Honourable Malemata, Honourable Sisai. Now you are safe, DM. You can be ready.
Yes, I want to say that. No, thank you. It is this one which. At some stage, it came not necessarily to HDA, but because they raised when they were talking to 2021, I mean 2020-2021, where they mentioned the issue of cash on cash, specifically to say some of the funds were recovered from the service provider, which you said so. Now, earlier on, we had a situation where we are able to recover those, but we do nothing to the service providers. The question will be, what is it that we have done to these service providers who defrauded, and we happen to recover this month? That automatically means that was guilty or not guilty, but what is it that we have done? If the service provider deal with you, or we have done whatever that you tell us to say, this is what we have done. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Sky.
Minister, this is, but I think the tune is from NHPRC. I could not get why NHPRC is not performing according to its role. I am not getting it from them. I am getting a process that I'm going to follow to rectify.
Mm.
And for me, it was not supposed to be like that. because there is no value created on the ground. It's in a mess. There's a mess in terms of what is expected from them. I am not getting what happened to their mandate, why they did not perform well, why they did not make sure that there's quality houses on the ground. I'm getting them saying, we go back and try to check how, and I'm not sure. And also the minister said, you go to provinces and make an assessment. I wanted to get, where is the gap? Where is the problem? Because they should have a systematized way of doing, because they cannot be all over provinces, more especially at this level. What is their system that they've created to make sure that there's quality houses on the ground in terms of their role? I'm not sure, maybe Minister, have high expectations. I'm not getting that. But for me, is that don't just accept, don't be just be defeated and you're not clarifying what made you to be defeated about the process, and then you say you're going to rectify it. Because we want to, also we've got a responsibility to make proposals. But once we, because as it is, and as it is, we're starting up, as we start up, we're going to deal with that. This is what you have to set up. We're going to go and deal with that. I'm not sure, Chairperson, my question is not a...
Okay. as the department, okay, no, they're going to respond. We'll give them time. I've asked the department that contractors are saying, we are expected to register in the NHBRC on yearly basis and renew, but you don't get appointed as contractors. And when they are talking about a mess, Yama contractors were included, but now we are not as servants, we are not being given contracts in the provinces. So my question to the department, how do we make sure that the provinces appoint only contractors that are registered with NHBRC? Are we sure that they do that, or do we have a system that tracks these people that are registered with us as a NHBRC when they get appointed? Because NHBRC and the department, we are not appointing contractors. They have been appointed by municipalities and provincial departments. Can we get reports?
DG, DM, and close.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's correct that we do not appoint the contractors. NHBRC will elaborate on that, but what we have picked up as the national department, which also NHBRC is aware of, is that provinces at the implementation level, sometimes they appoint contractors that are on the lower grade for the work that is hired. And that also is one of the reasons why we do not get the quality in the delivery. So from our technical side, is an emphasis that there should be that compliance, which will be be checked and be highlighted by the NHBRC. We do not have a database that taps into the contractors that are registered by, with the NHBRC as a national department. NHBRC is able to identify that contract so-and-so is at this level and then elevate that matter to say
Department of Human Settlements or municipality, you have appointed a contract for the higher value. That is the approach that we are using at the moment, Chairperson, but we do not have a database that taps into that to check that as a national department. Thank you.
Before you come, let's give you the CEO, and then the DM will come.
Yeah. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think just to add on what the acting DG said, indeed she is correct. As the NHBRC, we do have a database of all the registered contractors. What then this calls for is for greater engagement with provinces at an appointment process to ensure that all those contractors that get appointed are registered with us. So we need to work closely with them to ensure that happens. Now, to respond to your question, Honorable Sifai, in cases where we've been found wanting in terms of what we're expected to deliver, it suggested to us that there were issues with our system, processes, and people. So hence there was a need for us to review the whole inspection model of the NHBRC, because there were gaps there. So the enhanced inspection model that has been developed, it then seeks to address all those issues. That speaks to systems that we deploy, the people that we have, as well as our processes across our problems.
Yep. Chair, I was going to raise two issues. An issue which was raised by Honorable Sushwan, the people that were with disabilities that are given a house which is not suitable for people with disabilities. I was going to say, Chair, we will make a follow-up to contact the Western Cape, because we prioritize people with disabilities in this department. And the other thing that you raised, Chair, is the question of people that are forced to sign letters, that is happy letters. And I think the provincial assessment, which the Minister is talking about, will help us to understand all those issues that you raised and check and make a follow-up of the issues that you've raised, issue of people that are forced to sign letters. Happy letter, you are supposed to be happy when you sign it. You cannot be told to sign even if you're not happy. So I was going to raise those two, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the first issue I want to speak to is what Honorable Sufai raised about why are we sounding like it's only now that we are going to do issues. Maybe let me take members back that part of the challenge that we had was that with an organization that was depleted in capacity and there were no leadership. If you remember, there was an issue with even council that I had to disband last year and in the process because there was 18. So during that time, Honorable Members, there were quite a lot of challenges at NHBRC. Now, hence my remarks in the morning that this is a flight that you are fixing while on air. This is one of the areas. When we engaged last year towards the end of the year with the Portfolio Committee, there were quite a number of issues that were raised with us in terms of building capacity at NHBRC, which we have done in terms of closing the gap around ensuring that the CEO is appointed, in terms of ensuring that the board and the council and its committees are functioning effectively, and getting the structure to be approved, and also looking at the gaps that exist within the provinces. So in the work that has been there, not that we are entirely not aware of some of the challenges. For example, as I said, there would have been one or two provinces that we knew were problematic, and we paid attention to those provinces. Particularly, it was in the Free State and in Mpumalanga when we attended to them. So we attended to those provinces. We went and dealt with the issues. We had engagement with the board, with the council, to look at those areas and capacitate. The reason why I'm flagging that we might have to go back and redo, because at the time when we got feedback, it was basically around those specific areas. We didn't have much challenges in performance of, for example, NHBRC colleagues who were in Limpopo, for example, because you could find them doing some level of work and they were present to answer where their challenges. If there were an issue of, for example, challenges in the Eastern Cape, one of the areas that we had to attend to was that most of the projects that were done were not enrolled with NHBRC. So NHBRC would not even be aware that these projects have started. And part of the challenge was that then later you find the quality of the houses. As you go into those areas, then they are found wanting. And hence we had to have a discussion. It was then MEC Kotsiwe when we had a meeting with her and the team in the province, but also with the municipality. So we engaged several district municipalities together with local municipalities there to appeal to them to say, when these things are done, you have a project, you have an obligation to ensure that it's enrolled. Part of the issue in the project that we went to, in the one with the toilets, when we arrived, they started without NHBRC. I had to call NHBRC and NHBRC to start coming. We rectified in the process and the project was enrolled. So there are those other areas that exist in terms of the challenges that we experience. Not entirely that NHBRC is not aware of the challenges on the ground, but what I was flagging was that we do need from our side proactively to zoom in detail, speak to the issues around stakeholders, because the engagement between NHBRC and councillors and all the people, whether MPs on the ground, is critical. So that where there are gaps between NHBRC and municipalities, those public gaps can be the ears and eyes for what we are doing and what we are missing. And that's why I spoke about looking at the capacity, the number of inspectors, and if there are areas where there are challenges with the particular inspectors, we'll be able to pick up and replace them so that there's that capacity, Chair. I thought, let me just speak to that. And I think the issue that you are raising, Chair, around which I think we'll have to correct, particularly because if houses are going to be enrolled, you've got to ensure that you've got quality people. It shouldn't be flexible. It shouldn't be optional. For a government-spent project that is not enrolled, that it doesn't have the quality of the people that are supposed to be there. And these are some of the things, that's why the new bill will introduce penalties in those areas because there was identified gaps. But it does not stop us from starting with such process. I think you asked as well about capacity. When I was in the NCOP as well, they raised that to say in the process where you are currently having challenges as NHBRC in your portfolio and you are now adding on new responsibilities based on this bill, what is your plan? They raised that and we said we are revising the structure to be able to respond to what we are putting as part of the plan to support the implementation of the bill. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister, and the entities for the response. I think one of the things that we would have to do in areas where we have visited and there are issues, please NHBRC must go back and fix those things. Because even if you have a new bill and start to do good things, those skeleton will follow you. And they will come back and discuss the project that Honorable Magasin is talking about. It's a very beautiful project. But kunama toilet lapho amaqwaqweng nje. And the toilet that are very bad. And you feel it when and we're saying why don't we build those nice toilets and the worrying thing that it's even the material that have been used by our contractors. If you go to that project, you know the windows that have been used today. Very the quality, and I said to the contractor, I even took the photo with the contractor. I don't usually do that. The way in most minister, you get fed up as you visit this project, but there I had to take a photo with the contractor, and because they were beautiful houses. So I think those are the issues that we have to correct, go back and correct them. Because if you don't correct them, they'll follow you. Even if you start to build nice houses, you can show the nice house somebody's going to show the dilapidated houses that was built by the same government, and it's bringing contradiction. We will give you a Savelo. Please, let's finalize the report and give it to the NHBRC so that they go back to those areas, because it was individual people who says, my house, Yaneta, my house has collapsed, my house in Donington. So those issues must be fixed, so that as we get some of the things coming out, somebody will say, my house has been fixed when I've raised it with government. And the communication of beneficiaries with the entity is very critical, because they don't even know where to go. As we're emphasizing this thing of happy letters, but the happy letter must reflect those things. Your numbers must appear there where they must fold when they've got problems, and that insurance part, your house has been insured for so long. If after that it's your responsibility, because after 5 years you'll be called to come and rectify the houses, because maybe the houses had structural defects in 2 years, but because the beneficiary wouldn't know where to go, it ended up being done after 5 years, and we'll then say, no, your warranty fund is no longer existing. So I think it's important that municipality, they must stop taking those happy letters, not theirs. I was, when the media was asking me, I was trying to dive, but I was saying no, but here I'm killing our people, because they expect me to say the same things that I've said in the meeting. Because municipality, this thing of Auditor General, if it's true, department must talk to Auditor General in terms of because I don't understand how does the Auditor General audit the happy letter when the municipality is not is not even their responsibility. So I found it awkward, but I said, I'm not in the system, let me not argue with the municipality. But I say, I keep a chair. Auditor General was I'm a happy letters. What does the Auditor General want to do with the happy letters? Because it belongs to the beneficiary. And it was very awkward situation. But thank you very much. We are not raising these issues because we want to demoralize you. We are with you, as I've indicated when we started. Your performance, former honorable members will know, your performance is our performance. The good work that you do reflects even ourselves, that we do our oversight. Thank you very much. So we'll adjourn for lunch, and then, for dinner, and then we'll start the lunch. Then we'll have 6:30, we'll start again. And no one is released because we're a team.
How many did you get? Yeah, make it sound like 20. Oh, yeah. Send the management there.